recorded live.
Good evening, fellas. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to another Virtual Talk show for married men. And just get ready for one exciting evening of a fantastic call. I believe that this topic right here will help every man become a better balancer and how they balance the way their time and their life is. And I believe every man is going through this right now or has gone through it in the past. And you can probably help us out, the ones that's going through it, so we'll know what to do in the future. Our topic tonight, overcommitting. Overcommitted. With all the responsibilities you have at your job, your church, with your children's activities, with your extracurricular activities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Are you overcommitted? So before I go into all these subtopics of where, why are we overcommitted, or if you think you're overcommitted because you're doing this, I had to go and look up the definition of overcommitted. And Webster brought up two of them. First one says to commit oneself or others to too many obligations to fulfill a schedule, etc. And the second one says to promise something in a quantity above that which is can be provided. So, I mean, just based off the definition alone, let's talk about that. To commit oneself or others to many other obligations. I'm going to start with myself before I bring it to the audience here. I feel right now, talking to my wife, you know, there was some talk that I might be overcommitting myself, that I don't know how to say no when somebody asks me for something, you know, to help them out with something or to be involved in an organization or do something. I got a lot of things on my plate right now, and I'm trying to balance them out. I have church duties right now. It's my week to do Sunday school, so I'll be doing that Sunday, so I have to put something together over the evening. At work, I'm a manager, so I have to make sure at my job that I make sure everybody else is prepared for their jobs on a daily basis, make sure that the system is up 24 hours a day, so I'm always on duty. I'm also a head coach, and I coach the upper basketball league, so I'm always with kids on Tuesday night and on Saturdays. I'm juggling all these different things. And I was thinking about it, and I said, man, I got a full schedule. And then I continue to add on to it. I do, I've now added on Wednesday nights at Bible study. Instead of doing that, I lead the Royal Rangers, the adventure class, the 7- and 8-year-olds, and teach them Christianity in a Boy Scout demeanor. So showing them how to live on outside, how to become a young man, and bring in a little Christianity in that. So I got a lot of things on my plate. And then I also got my kids. They always have something, like they got projects to do this month for Black History Month, for African Americans. So I have all this I'm juggling, and I don't have any time for sleep. Can somebody help me out? Can somebody say, am I the exact same way? Or, man, you really got a lot on your plate. Can somebody help me out on that?
What's up, fellas? D.
What's up,
man? What's up, D?
Well, I guess if I had to look at it, I would say, yeah, you have a lot on your plate, but then at the same time, you know, how do you manage your time? And does it cause friction, you know, within the relationship? I know I had that, you know, some time ago where, you know, I'm in the National Guard, which is like a full-time job, teacher. I was coaching college basketball. I was doing a lot of things, and you know, I had to make a sacrifice. You know, my wife was like, you know, you're doing too much. And I didn't realize I was doing too much until she actually said it, you know, because to come home tired and, you know, stressful and all this other stuff, that really wasn't the issue. The issue was that I didn't have time to enjoy for myself. Now, although I enjoyed everything that I did, I didn't have that free time, meaning that, you know, I couldn't just, I think I'd go out for the weekend. I had to deal with basketball. And then you got to deal with family. So I think what you might want to do, and it may be a hard decision, you have to may have to eliminate something or downplay something so you can better enjoy or put more emphasis in something that may need your additional, you know, assistance or whatever. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you can't do everything. And that's one thing I had to realize. I can't do everything.
Right.
And actually, I wouldn't even say can't. I would say I won't do everything. Because, you know, I try to tell my son that can't is not really a word of vocabulary, but it comes down to that I won't do everything, but this is the reason why, rather than just being blunt or just being rude with it. You know, I won't do everything because of this, 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 and this, and this.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, Patrice, I second that, what Dee was saying, that you got a lot on your plate. And I know me, like, I make sure I have one day, you know, just where I have nothing on the plate. And that's, you know, right now that's Saturday. And, you know, they asked me to come out, you know, on Saturdays at the church and stuff. And I was like, no. I mean, literally, because, I mean, that would you know, leave me with no day to myself. You know, it's 5 days of work, you know, kids and, you know, homework and all that good stuff. And then, you know, Sunday I work, you know, at the church and stuff. And then, you know, they want me to do Saturday, too. I'm like, no, nah, you know, I just can't do it. And, you know, it was a time where I had, you know, just so much, you know, like you. And I had to, you know, kind of reflect and pull back because it was no time for me, much less no time for, you know, me and the wife. You know, we always, you know, doing something, you know, for somebody else. And we never really save time, you know, for each other.
I found that that same thing. And what we ended up having to do was to sit down as a couple and say, okay, what, you know, what time are we going to do this? What time are we going to have for us and different things like that? And sometimes we even have to reevaluate. One thing that I found out is generally people that are achievers and doers, other people notice that and start to tap them to do other things. And all of a sudden, you start to say yes, yes, yes. You turn around, and it's like, my God, I, you know, like you were saying, Rodney, every night something's going on. And we had to kind of sit back and say, okay, this is, you know, this is our night. All right, nothing comes in between here. We're not going to do this, and we're not going to do that, because if not, literally, especially, you know, y'all that are involved in church, there's always somebody saying, can you do this? You know, can you
do
that?
Yeah, even Andrew, you know, you asked me, you know, to help you out with that. And, you know, what did I ask you? I was like, what's the time commitment? You know, I'm like, I'm sure
exactly.
It's not a, you know, big time commitment because, you know, when you got kids and job and, you know, all that good stuff, you know, the time commitment, finding that out is important because it may be something that you can't work in your schedule.
Exactly.
You know, before I say yes, I was like, well, wait a minute, you know, let me, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, because I want to make sure, you know, if I'm going to do something, I want to do it to the best of my ability. I don't want to shortchange you, you know, so it's like I have to, you know, make sure that I'm giving you 100% before I, you know, commit to it.
And that's one other thing that I found out, Rodney, is that just because my wife and I are doing something, that doesn't mean that we are together, you know, as like with downtime. I had to say to my wife, you know, we're together a lot, but we're doing things, and, you know, we're not just me and you and kicking it, you know, in front of the fireplace with a glass of wine or whatever, you know?
Exactly.
And you need, we need those kind of times. You know, we may be out, you know, doing something with the marriage ministry or hosting a couple or whatever it happens to be, you know, but we're together, but we're not just me and her and just, you know, relationship time.
And I think the other thing you have to look at is really not to overcommit yourself, meaning that I know I had a situation where I just got back from Afghanistan. I was starting a new school system. My wife was pregnant. She was actually due a week after I started this. Then I got switched to another school. Then I got on, was taken on three different positions that I hadn't been trained in. And I'm like, yeah, I take it. But then not knowing what it was doing to me mentally and then physically, and then 3 months down the road, I mean, 3 months later, I literally had a nervous breakdown. I had to take a leave of absence because it was just so overwhelming. And
wow.
The people that were putting me in these positions wasn't thinking about my well-being. They were just thinking about them. And didn't really, and myself, not blame myself too, because I could have just said no. And I didn't. But what I did, I said no to everything except the family. I said, you know what? I'm leaving the job for right now. I can't take this right now. I'm going to take a couple months off, and I'll be back. And when I came back, I said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And I was within my legal rights to do that. And I just didn't know because I'm thinking, yeah, I can do this. But when you take on things which are new to you, you know, marriage was new to me. Childbirth was new to me. The new position was new to me. The other position was new to me. And the other position was new to me. And then, you know, so I had all these things that were new to me that I didn't give myself time to adjust and get acclimated to anything. So, you know, that's what you want to look at. So when you look at what you have right now, this is Patrice, right?
Yep.
When you look at what you have right now, be cognizant of what someone else may ask you to do, because if you can't handle what you have now, you know, sometimes you may just have to say, no, I can't do that. I can't fit that in my time. And, you know, I actually said it 2 days ago. A friend wanted me to some business venture. I'll be honest with you. I don't have the time. And I said, I would lose money doing this because I knew I would not be committed to it. So it doesn't make sense for me to give you money just to lose double that because I'm not committed in it.
Yeah, taking that leave of absence, D, that was probably the best thing you could have did for your family.
And it was. I'm saying it was because, you know, there was just a lot of stuff going on, and I just did not have time. And, where I worked at, they pretty much knew they was at fault because, you know, they were like, wow, oh, we didn't know this. They knew. But
I have to say, I did the same thing. I mean, I had my first leadership position. I would overdo it. I would just constantly just work instead of bringing work home, taking work to work, getting there 4 o'clock in the morning, leaving late. You know, I'm following the book, basically. You know, so I can get the job because they put me at an interval. But in doing that, I worked myself where I was so exhausted that I couldn't even get out of bed. And I had to take, just like you said, a leave of absence for a day or so, just to sleep, to get my wits back together. And I find myself, all right, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. I'm not going to do this anymore. I know that it's better to work smarter than to work harder. I don't know if anybody has heard that before or who lives by that rule, but I learned how to do that. And I was able to adjust my schedule and then start delegating things out more to my teammates instead of me just trying to do every single thing myself. And it was just too exhausting. So, and I really just,
and that's,
you know,
the key
going
right
to set
there.
The alarm off to get up to go to work and just, bam, hit the floor. My leg said, nope, you're not going anywhere today. And I didn't know how overcommitting yourself will make you so exhausted. And that is great. We got a couple folks online. I want to see anybody else want to chime in before we move to the next topic. Anybody else?
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, you kind of answered the question, his question, because just like a pastor, you know, your pastor is a great leader, but he knows how to delegate, you know, because he looks to you as a leader. And your natural ability, as from what I hear, that you're a manager. So a manager and as a leader, as the people see you, so you just know how to delegate, you know, these things out to others, and you can be responsible to a degree and know that you put competent people in charge rather than always taking it all upon yourself.
Because
it can get overwhelming.
I got a question.
Yes.
I got a question. when taking on these responsibilities, being though that most of the men on this line are married, do we consult with our wives first, or do we just say yes and just go tell them exactly, you know, what the deal is, you know, and just deal with the flack later on? Because 9 times out of 10, I think that would be something that would help the constantly saying yes, 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 if you just say, well, let me check with my wife. First of all, that will get you out of that. That will get you out of that situation right then and there, because you've told that person, "Well, I can't answer you right now. I got to go check with my wife." You know what I mean? Instead of just saying yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I use my wife. I ain't gonna lie. I tell her straight up. I use her as a scapegoat. I'd be like, "Nah, I don't think my wife's gonna let me do it." I don't have no problem with it. I generally say that to the ones that I don't hear from them that often. Hey, man, what you doing? You mind doing this? I'm like, man, I got to get with my wife and see what her schedule's like. You know, so, but, you know, even, you know, for me, it just makes it a little bit easier, you know, especially if my, you know, like, for instance, I'm helping out a friend in a basketball tournament 2 weeks from now, but I was like, you know, babe, I said, do you mind if I go there for a couple hours, because I committed to it a year ago, and she was like, oh, that's fine, you know. Now, I doubt she would have said no, but, you know, just to let her know, and then if I could make it, you know, I could have said, well, my wife has something planned I didn't know about. But, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it. And, you know, I think you should consult your wife, you know, just so, because if she's understanding of it, then it hopefully won't be that stressful.
Yeah, and also, to answer that question, I definitely consult with my wife because she's overcommitted. So, you know, I know that, you know, I've got to, you know, we both can't be overcommitted, because that's just not going to be a happy and healthy situation. So I always consult with her. I'm like, you know, can we swing this, you know? And you know, I trust her judgment, because a lot of times, you know, she'll say no, you know, we can't, you know, neither one of us can do anything else, or if it's something, you know, something that can fit in, you know, she'll say yeah, we can do that. But, you know, I always consult with her.
Thank you, Rodney, because that moved in right into my next question, is what if both of you are old committed, your wife and you? You know, this is 2010. Both the wife and the man are working these days. Both have responsibility with the kids' activities. But they also have responsibility with their own organizations, or, you know, if your wife is a sorority or she's in community service and you're dealing with the work and you're dealing with community service or whatever you have there. Have we fallen in some situations? Has anybody on the phone fallen in that situation where you don't even see the wife until 1 o'clock in the morning, when both of y'all are sliding in the bed with the stinking breath saying good night in the morning?
But what kind of life is that, though? I mean, honestly, I mean, at some point we have to have some control of the decisions that we make, you know, and our time allotment. And then as men, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, are we taking on all these responsibilities because maybe we just don't want to be home? You know, because I'm pretty sure that's the case in a lot of situations. Some people don't want to be home. There's a gentleman that got on the call before and said he'd drive around the block for about an hour just to get himself geared, just to go in the house.
Yeah, you know? That's
so
a great point.
Yeah, there might be some underlying issues that we may have that we're really not addressing here, because why else wouldn't you want to, you know, be home with the wife and kids on a, you know.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Tony,
that
you bring up, because – you know, just like you, you know, you say that, I know people who purposely overcommit just so they can't be home. And it's so odd to me, because if I could be anywhere, I'd rather be at home. I mean, that's just me. You know, I have opportunities to travel and stuff, but I hate to travel, you know, for work and stuff. I hate it, you know, because I'd rather be at home, you know. And I was just in Florida last week, as y'all know, and, you know, everybody, oh, man, you got to go to Florida. I was like, man, that wasn't exciting. Man, I went, you know, did my work and came home. I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, if I could be anywhere, I'd rather be home. But I think it's interesting to me that people purposely overcommit so as to not be home, or to always to be, you know, running and ripping. And I'm just like, that's just not, you know, healthy for any relationship. Because, like you said, I mean, you never really, like, just two passing ships, you know, it's never, you never really get that quality time in anymore, when you always got to run here, run there, do this with the kids, and you know, the whole thing is that, you know, you got to learn how to say no. I mean, we can't do it all.
Yeah, Rodney, will you get on something? Because I was in a relationship like that at one point where I didn't want to come home. And that is more of, you know, a symptom of a challenge in a relationship than overcommitment. You know, but I have definitely been in that place.
Well, yeah, and also you got to be careful too, man, because let's just say, I mean, back to Patrice's question, let's just say that the husband and the wife are overcommitted and they're working these long hours and they see each other in the wee hours of the morning. You know, there's other people of the opposite sex that are at the workplace that you're spending more time with than your own spouse. And that could be dangerous too. And that could be detrimental on both parties.
One thing that my wife and I have had to do from time to time, there's times that I get this feeling like, you know what, we're not spending enough time together. And, you know, I'll pull my wife aside and we need to do something about this. This is really important. This is serious. And, you know, we have to look at things and say, okay, we got to ratchet some things down. I'll give you a case in point. When the ladies started their calls on Thursday night, all right, that took a night that was our night, and that took it away, and it no longer gave us time, just me and her. So there was no way they could do that anymore. You know, we did that for about a month, and then was like, this isn't working. And that was the reason, because every night of the week it was something else, and that was the only time that we had for us. So we had to look at that and say, okay, this is something we'd like to do, but we have to move this to have the women's call and the men's call on the same night so my wife and I can have a night together.
Yeah.
Good words.
That is. And because my next question is, does that affect the wife, our own commitment? And is it our responsibility, just like Andrew just said, to say, hey, I looked in the mirror and I'm doing too much. But however, we need to have a date night. We need to have a night where it's just no kids and there's no outside influences that will bring us in, and it just be me and you, husband and wife. Do we need those?
Okay, well, let me flip that back to you, because you were probably one of the most overcommitted people that I know. So I'm gonna flip that question right back to you, sir.
Well, I tell you, just last week, I looked in the mirror. And that's how I got this topic, and said, yeah, well, though I can handle all this commitment, my wife came to me one day and said, I'm jealous of you. I said, what? What do you mean you're jealous of me? I mean, she says, you're involved in all these activities. I don't have any time. Where am I in there?
Oh.
Well,
that'll hit you.
No, you're right. You know, some of these are dreams for me, though, and I think I took the commitments because they were just dreams for me. I always wanted to coach basketball. That was my first dream. Okay. So I'm working. If somebody called me and said we need you to coach our team, I'll probably quit the job and go coach the team. That's how serious I am about coaching. I just like teaching young kids. It's just, I grew up, my grandmother was a teacher. You know, my mom taught Sunday school, and you know, I've been my aunt was a teacher. So I've been around teaching all my life, and I've always wanted to give back, and that was my way of giving back, and that's how I ended up with doing Sunday school teaching. When it was brought to me and said, hey, we need some help for Rodney, I said, hey, I do it. I don't have any problems with it. It helped me in my leadership, which helped me become a better leader at the job. So all these things helped me out through my career, through how I'm delegating, how I'm even running my household now. But the thing was is, when I look back, my family was way back there. Though my wife is with me every step of the way, you know, you'll see her at every basketball game. You'll see her at church every Wednesday night. You'll see her at church every Sunday. She may not be in the class with me, but she's right there with me. But thing was is, okay, you're doing all this during the week. The only night that we have is Monday night, and we're watching TV. When are we going to have some us time where we can get out and have some fun and communicate outside of the home?
Yeah, let me touch on that, Mr. Host, and just throw a little monkey wrench on that. And, you know, you say Monday is the only night. Is it safe to say that it's the head of household's responsibility to plan something and to make something, you know, happen for that night, or just make it, you know, not just sitting in front of the TV and just kind of in each other's space, but not really that quality time? And you think that's the head of household's sole responsibility?
Oh, it's our sole. It is. Because I got TiVo now. Even though on Monday night, my wife and I, we have this ritual. We put the kids to bed. We hit the TiVo and House, and 24 is our favorite show.
Okay.
So we watch those. But between Monday and Thursday, I can use those nights. But I can't do outside of the home on Monday because that's a school night.
School night, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Friday will be my next night that we can do stuff. Because, you know, and so this week I asked a friend of mine, I said, hey, Mr. T-Hawk, I need you to babysit. I need you to get your daughter over to the house. I got date night. I can't take it no more.
That's what's up.
And without any question, he said, sure. It's done deal. Set it up. Do what you got to do. And we end up having fun. We end up coming in the house until maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And we had a fantastic time. And then I was able to go wake up Saturday morning and go to the game. And then we came back and we weren't tired and we were doing this other stuff. So I think date night is needed in the home.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question.
That to anybody.
Well, let me ask a question.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
You said, is it the head of household responsibility to always, you know, plan that? I don't think it's our responsibility to always plan it. I think it's nice to have both of, you know, husband and wife be involved in doing that. I think it's our responsibility if we notice that things are getting out of hand to say we got to make some adjustments. But I kind of like my wife to set some things up sometimes and say, come on, let's go down to Blues Alley or whatever. It's nice to have somebody else to set some things up sometimes.
Yeah, a perfect example is, what's coming up next week,
right.
Valentine's Day. And
well, you know that's
I got two date nights on Valentine's Day.
You know, I don't know if, you know.
Valentine's
maybe,
the 13th and the 14th for me.
Yeah, me too. But, I mean, the whole thing about Valentine's Day is, you know, I get that's like I never look forward to getting anything on Valentine's Day. I mean, it's like that's one of those holidays where it's always, all right, you know, what I'm going to do this year. Maybe
oh, wait
it's just
a minute.
Me.
You only get one holiday, and that's Father's Day. You don't get
that. you need to get that straight and know that Valentine's Day is not for us. Get it straight from the beginning. Okay? You might get your little card and be happy with it, but you don't straighten things out for Valentine's Day. You paying for that for the next 3 months.
You're gonna know you're
paying for it.
And Patrice, the one thing that I was noticing is certain things that you said is about, you know, your schedule and your dreams and things that you've always wanted to do. And it seems like as men, sometimes the entire week revolves around our schedule, our commitments of things that we have to do. But do we take time to stop and say, okay, what about my wife's dreams and the things that she wants to do? Because you said your wife is with you at the games and supporting your stuff. But is it vice versa? Is it something where we can say, well, you know, I'm going to find, like, if my wife likes to go do pottery or go shopping or whatever the case may be, are we finding times where we can devote our schedule to go and follow some of their dreams? Stuff
I have
as well?
To say no. But I'll leave that out to the audience. We got a lot of folks on. So I'll let somebody else speak on that.
Okay, good. Good words.
I would say only if there's going to be some other males there. I don't like going if I'm the only one going. Like, say I'm going to, I don't know, some art show. I'm the only husband going. I'm like, okay, I really feel out of place. Because the girl's going to be talking. It's sort of like one of those girl night out. If it's just me and her, I have no problem. But when it's me and four or five others, and I don't know any of them, yeah, I got a problem. I could have been looking at the game or something like that. That's just me. But I can't really think of an instance or an occasion where, you know, I flat out just didn't go. Usually, you know, she knows me, so she'd be like, I don't think Derek will go. Or I'd be like, I don't think Eric will go. She'll ask, just out of courtesy. But I'm like, oh, it's okay. She's like, okay, you know.
And that, for most women, everybody can answer this one. This one it deals with shopping. That's what women like to do.
Yep. I'm going shopping Saturday.
I'll do that.
Yeah, I think the thing about it is I feel like I'm supportive, and I definitely can do things. But when it's just me going for the sake of going, and I'm not included, then I kind of have a problem with that. And what I mean by that is, when I do things and she supports me with things that I'm going to, I like to be a part of, I include her. She plays a part in it. She has a role. She's doing something. She's interacting with others, and people are meeting her, or she's doing something. But when I'm just going and we're just there for the sake of I'm just there, then I have a problem with that. I can only do that so many times before it becomes something where I have to say, you know what, I'm not going to go this time. Because too often has it become the type of situation where I'm in the space and it's deemed we're doing stuff together, but we're really not. And that, to me, that doesn't really bode well to trying to do something together. Because when I include her, whether it's work-related or it's personal or it's something recreational or whatever, she's doing something. She's involved, and she can actually say, wow, I contributed to that. But if I'm just there, then I can't do that for so many times. You know, like the
shopping
thing.
Yeah, but that's all good. But that's all good, because it sounds like you've made several attempts to support. You know what I mean? And I know they don't expect us to, you know, follow them every single time. You know, but if we show some support every now and then, I think, you know, that's half the battle.
Now, you've got to draw some lines, though, man. You got to draw some lines. My wife has been asking me to go to the baby showers.
Uh-oh.
And
I
I'm like, you know, where I come from, dudes that go to baby showers, that ain't for me. That's just not me.
If it's co-ed, they do co-ed sometimes.
They doing co-ed nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
That's I may be dating myself, but that's predating what I grew up with. Dudes don't do stuff like that. And I mean, my wife, you know, she got this thing, oh, but it's, you know, it's the thing to do today. Men go, I'm like, that's not my thing. You can go. I'll see you when you get back. It's just me.
Now, I have a question. Has any of the brothers ever did something that your wife knows that you don't like, but you did it just because? Mm. Like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and just, because the reason I said because I did it this weekend.
Yeah, all the time.
You know, I don't. And she knows I don't like going into these little fragrance shops, Bath Body, whatever. She knows I don't like any of that. I don't like any of it. You know, I'm like, she's like, I know you ain't going, so I'll meet you. I'm like, okay. But
give
she went to this shop called Lush. some shop called Lush. And had like this organic stuff, whatever. But one thing that I never do is try the stuff. So I saw her and I looked. I went, okay, I'll try it. So I ended up buying something. I ain't never bought any. I mean, never bought anything with her present. You know, I may have went in there and got her something real quick and walked out. But I never bought anything while she was there. I ended up buying something. But I got some stuff that she said, you try it out. And it's like regardless what it is, I ended up getting it. I'm like, wow. I ain't never bought anything with her in here. And I did it just because.
Yeah.
You know that.
It happens all the time. I mean, for me, it would be Target and Walmart. I hate those stores. The people in there are crazy. You know, especially in Walmart. And when you go into Target, the Target is you. That's the name of the game. See, I figured it out. You're the Target.
Oh, I like that, the Target.
So I hate those stores. But you know what? My wife loves them. And sometimes I say, you know what, I'm just sitting in the car, and she may be in there an hour, and I will literally sit in the car, or I'll go in. But the times I go in, it's doing just what you said. I'm going out, and she knows I can't stand it. But I'm there. I'm pushing the cart, trying not to make eye contact with any crazies. But I'm there.
I used to do that, too, and it got to a point where my wife would say, I'm not even going to ask you to come, because I know you're going to have your lips poked out the whole time. I mean, it is what it is. If I don't like to do it, you know, I mean, I will try it. But if you know, I've said this before, you know, my wife is Spanish. So a lot of times we go out with her family and, well, not a lot, but certain situations we may go to when most of the people, you know, speak Spanish and I don't, you know, so I'm like, okay, I can't communicate. I mean, you know, and even if, you know, I mean, it's awkward. So sometimes I don't want to go. You know, but I don't want to be insensitive, so I'll roll anyway and, you know, have my iPhone with me or whatever the case may be. But I hear you, man. Sometimes you just, you know, you got to do what you got to do, I guess.
You know, I think it's more of them realizing that we are willing to do things, to do those things from time to time. You know, it's more of, you know, a sacrifice, and they can see that. And most of the time, you know, what I've found is, you know, they appreciate that you're willing to do it even though you don't want to do it. You know, you kind of get those brownie points.
Just like we talked about last week, they keep score.
Right. True though, man.
Yeah, you know, they keep score, so you gotta take one for the team every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm still not going to the baby shower, so you can stop that.
And I bring this up because this past weekend, after church, we went to go get something to eat, and there was a, you know, the wife, they'd have looked at the paper, knew there was a sale at the Gap, and it had to be one right across the street. So,
set up, man.
I said, they was like, can we go to the Gap? So I, under my breath, they heard me, but I said, darn. And I knew what this was going to be. And so, no, we was in there for about an hour, hour and a half, and I'm holding, and a great sale. But I ended up spending about $100 up in there.
Wow.
Set up, man.
You know, they had a sale, and you know how women in sale and clearances are. They just came, they going to just grab everything. They're going to check, triple check, throw some stuff back, get some more stuff.
Oh, I hate that.
And, you know, you're standing there, and after you, it take me 2 minutes to do me. Cause I'm a big dude, so if I don't see any 40s in there, I'm good. I'm done. I'm done for the day. So, but the kids, you know, she was finding all these great sales for the kids. So I ended up finding myself standing at the door with Tone. We and him just standing at the door. And then we had to go find a seat and sit there for a while. You know, until they were finished doing what they did. And the funny thing about it is that in that conversation, we talked about how we would do this back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
When we were players, you know, mm-hmm. Before we got married, where there'd be guys just like we're talking on the phone. You know, I'm just, that's just not in my thing. And we'll be the ones who are, why they're not doing it. guess where we are. Gotcha. You know,
yeah, I mean, that's a good
lady,
point.
We're with that lady out there in the store. Even though we know in the back of our mind we hate it. Feet hurt, the whole nine. But we're taking one for the team for something we're trying to get at the end of the night.
For the payoff.
Yeah.
The payoff.
For the payoff.
Yeah.
should we use this in marriage as for the payoff, all right? I mean, this goes back to last week where we talked about keeping score.
There might be easier ways to get the payoff, though.
Yeah, that's going to backfire on you. I see that coming. No, this is like watching a movie and say, don't go through that door, and you went through it anyway. Went through that door anyway.
That's right.
That's
man,
hilarious.
Well, it's not 10 o'clock yet, but I got to throw this in there. Guest 16, are they still on the phone? I mean, no, they're
not
in the chat room anymore, but I'm going to bring it up anyway because it's a great question. My first monkey wrench is when we talked about the spouse, but how does our overcommitment not only hurt the spouse, but affect the relationship with our own children? You know, during the week, you know, you leave 4 a.m. because you got to drive into D.C. or something like that. Or wherever you are, you got to get in traffic to get to work, so you don't really get to see them off in the morning. And then when you get home, it's time for them to go to bed.
I think what I've learned is that you have to make the most of the time that you have. And, you know, if you are getting up at 4, you know, talk to your kids if you know, in the morning or that little bit of time or whatever. You just have to make the most of what you have. And I think, you know, Rodney, the other Rodney always says, you know, everybody gets 24 hours. It's just how you utilize those 24 hours. And I just think you have to maximize. And when you're, you know, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever the case may be, where you're not, you know, getting up and rushing around and not having that quality time to spend with your kids, then that's when you, you know, make that effort to say, you know, hey, let's go to the park or let's go here or there. And, you know, just be for them, you know, and make them feel special, you know, rather than kind of just vegging out on the weekends.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I don't think kids have the ability to have a perspective to understand what our commitments are. They just feel like we are not there and we may not be interested in them. They don't understand, you know, work commitments and things like to them, there's no difference between, you know, us going to work or us going to a ball game. We're just not there. You know,
I would have to beg to differ on that one. And I tell you why. My kids know my schedule better than I know my schedule. And because I allow them to come with me, and they're right there with me, like my overcommitments is just, other than the job that they say come to, all my commitments is something that they're in.
Oh, okay.
You understand what I'm saying? My son, he was supposed to play basketball this year, but I got into play coaching because of my son. I got into Royal Rangers because of my son. I got into Sunday school for both my son and my daughter so that they can see this is what you need. And then it's another way I have to go to church because I'm committed to church because we got to go to these classes. That means they have to go to class. So, because I'm doing it, they see the work impact that they need to have even in their schoolwork.
Well, what about those
daughter brings home all A's now, you know?
What about those who are not overcommitted, you know, with things with their kids, but with other things that the kids aren't involved in?
Well, that's the question is, And this is the question that guest 16 brought up. I know everybody doesn't have their laptops open, so I'll read it. It says, wonder how the challenges presented by access to technology by the youth alters how adults are able to communicate and connect with them. I think because we're overcommitted in the way technology is now, we buy more stuff for our kids to keep them occupied while we do our thing.
Yep.
Somebody please tell me I'm wrong on this.
You're absolutely right. And I said Sunday, I was like, the more technology advances, the more money we have to spend. I mean, with all the gadgets and stuff. But, you know, I found that, you know, my kids, you know, over the years I've bought them a bunch of gadgets, and they end up playing with the basic stuff and, like, crayons and paper, you know, or just coming up with, you know, I give them a cardboard box and they make a car out of it or something. But, you know, I think we, you know, we overdo it with our kids, you know, just trying to occupy them and, you know, just going back, you know, keeping on topic is that, you know, we try to keep them occupied where, you know, we could just talk to them, you know, while we're en route, you know, to the job or whatever. And, you know, rather than getting something to entertain them, you know, or to pacify them, rather.
Well, I think also going back to, you know, the question that was posed about kids knowing whether or not, you know, you're there for commitments that are relevant or not, ball game, work, I think it all depends on the dynamics of the household and the situation that you're in, too. I mean, I think at the beginning, you know, when they're young, they probably will not be able to know the difference between the two. They'll just know that, wow, you know, even if you're a part of whatever's going on, if it's not something that they're interested in to the degree that you may be interested in or the commitment you have, they may even be able to say, well, you know, daddy goes there and spends all this time with all these people, but really, I just want them to be spend time with me, you know. It could be the type of situation where I'm just thinking about myself, single-parent home. You know, my mother was working in Richmond Public School Systems for 36 years, you know, doing summer schools and having to do night jobs at Sears and stuff to make ends meet. So I knew my mom wasn't there because of the commitments so that we could keep lights on, because we had times where lights weren't on. We had times where, you know, she's making sure I'm eating, and I never saw my mom eat that night. I didn't realize that until I started getting older and realizing that, okay, I understand the commitments that she has to do this stuff so that I have some clothes to go to school with. You know, she needs to do these things because it's just not there. So I think it all depends on the dynamics, because I look back at it and I honestly say, yeah, my mom wasn't there for a lot of things, but she was there when it mattered, and that's all that matters to me. You know, and those are the things that are really important. There were times when she needed sacrifice. I mean, she made sacrifices and got there and was a part of things that I didn't think she was going to be able to make it, but she did it. And I don't know at what cost on the back end, but you know what? She was there. So I think it all just depends on the dynamics, because I knew that, hey, if my mom doesn't go here and if she don't do this summer and if she don't work driver's ed and if she don't work at Sears at night, wow, where are we going to go? I mean, that was just it. So I think it also depends on that. But the commitment piece is something else. I mean, I will say that being overcommitted. I mean, I think, you know, part of it for me right now when I think about my own personal situation, you know, I don't know if I'm really overcommitted. Sometimes I don't know if I'm committed enough, because I am kind of trying to go in the opposite direction because of what I just said and the way I was brought up. I really try to make sure that I'm here to do the things I need to do, and I'm around. Sometimes to the point that my wife is like, you got to go. You go do something, you know. But that, I mean, that, yeah. You know, that's all I can say. I just got thinking about growing up, and that just took everything else away. So, but, yeah, it's something else.
Vino.
Yeah. I want to ask a question.
Vino.
Do you think church could be too much of a commitment also?
And but that's what I was got- – I was kind of, that's where I was kind of going with when, you know, when the gentleman was saying earlier, you know, I'm there and I'm doing the Sunday school, I'm doing this and what, you know, I mean, can you be too involved and overcommitted in some of these things?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Church can be a big commitment. And, you know, a relationship with God constitutes less commitment and more of Him, you know, because in your home is where it starts, you know. And in the Word of God, it's going to tell you that, you know, the you know, a man that doesn't, you know, take care of his family is worse off than an infidel. That's somebody that denies Christ. So, obviously, He shows you the importance of a family, and it's not always about committing to things.
Well, one thing about it is that I think sometimes we can be enablers because, you know, as they say, well, 20%, you know, do 80% of the work or whatever the number is, but by you know, by the same few keep stepping up, that, you know, that doesn't even allow anybody else to step up, because they know, you know, oh, Johnny's going to do it. We know he'll do anything we ask him, you know. So, and then the other folks are just comfortable sitting on the sideline, you know. And it at first it was hard for me to say no, you know, when it came to, you know, things going on at church. But, you know, now it's just like, I just can't do it, because I'm not going to overcommit myself. So, you know, I just, you know, I think about it, talk to the wife, you know, and then I make a decision. I never make a, you know, on-the-spot decision, because it won't work out the best that way usually.
Well, let me ask this question. Fellas, you know, how can you get overcommitted in church, though? I mean, do you feel guilty? I mean, I guess what I understand you want to take on roles, you want to do different things, and that's actually one of the questions I have, like, later on tonight when we have the open mic. But it's like, how do you get overcommitted in church? You know what I mean? Like, I can see work, you know. I can see, you know, maybe with your kids' youth basketball team or something to some degree. But in church, there's so many people there that are supposed to be there for the right reason, to want to contribute, to want to give. I would hope so. So is it just something personally that you feel guilty, like you have to? Because I guess the reason why I ask that is because I never feel that way.
I think the church is one of the easiest places to get overcommitted.
But how?
Somebody stated that 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And if you feel in your heart that you want to give back and you want to do things, you know, because of what God's done for you, it's not a situation of you not wanting to do things. But in our church, and probably in many churches, there are many, many, many different ministries, and all the ministries have needs. And you tend to find that the leaders, you know, in the church pretty much are doing several different things because they're willing to do. Most of the people in the church are pew sitters and won't do anything, and there's work that needs to be done.
Well, let me ask this. Is the present-day model of the church set up to have those that are involved overcommit? Because it seems like it's just, like you say, it's so many different things. You know, every time I look up, there's a fund for something. The steps need to get fixed. The door handle's broken. I mean, yeah, can we get this person to do this? Is it set up to keep people just constantly doing everything? Because it seems like, from what I've heard so far on the call, I've heard a lot of other examples, but most of the one thing that gets the most reaction out of everybody on the call seems to be church. So is the present model set up to have you overcommitted?
I don't think the model is, but the Word of God says, you know, hey, the work is great, but the workers are few.
The laborers are few, that's right.
You know, and you know, pray for more workers in the field. Because the work, when you start to understand what, you know, what the work needs to be done and the people that need to be reached, there's a whole lot of hurting people out there that need a touch from God. And if somebody didn't take the time for me, it's not a guilt thing. It's an honor for me to do things because, I mean, I'm, you know, somebody came into my life, you know, and it's just one of those things. Now, I had to draw lines where I said, okay, well, you know, I can't do certain things. So I don't have any problem saying no. I don't have to use my wife as an excuse. I always ask her. But I believe my yes is a yes and my no is a no. If you ask me to do something and I can't or don't want to do it, I'll say, no, I don't want to do that, or no, I can't do that. I don't have any problem saying no. But there are legitimate needs that people have. And if somebody isn't doing something and you can do it, most people that have a heart for God want to help people.
But even in having a heart for God, of course we all do, at what cost does it come to you? Because that's what we're talking about, is what are you losing, whether it's time with your wife, whether it's time with your kids?
And you have to take a step back. When my wife and I got married, the first thing we did was, for 6 months, we said we're not getting involved in anything. The only ministry that we are going to have is ministering to one another. And we built a solid foundation on that. And every year when we start to look at what needs to be done, the most important things that, you know, the precedent is the relationship. There's nothing more important than my marriage relationship. And if she's feeling neglected or I'm feeling neglected, whatever else is going on can be cut and adjusted, because there's nothing more important than our marriage relationship.
I think that, and I get what you're saying. I get the question that you're asking. And I'll just tell you about my situation. The life that I had prior to starting going to church, I was just glad that they even let me in the door. And the fact that they let me in the door and said, okay, we need some help, I was glad to help. But the thing about it was, when you show up to help and they know they can depend on you, then they're going to ask you, okay, well, now we got something else going on. Would you mind helping out? You know what I mean? And if you do that, then they're going to ask you, well, we got something else going on. And it's not that they want to do it to overcommit you, but the help just isn't there. And to run any church, they need help. Because remember, they're not that many employees. You see what I'm saying? So now the congregation has to step up. You know what I'm saying? So my personal situation, they would ask me, okay, I do this and then do that. And I was okay, but then I had to step back and say, okay, I'm going to give y'all one night a week. One night a week. You know what I mean? And that's it. And maybe, you know, if we got to do something on a Saturday or whatever, I'll come in, but one night a week. And for me, that's good. There's no guilt there. You have to be able to cut it off at a certain point.
How great would it be if in every church, every person said, I'll give one night a week?
Well, that's what I was just about to say. I was just about to say that. And the example that I was going to throw along with it was, you know, I'd rather have people give of their time so that the 20% of people aren't doing 80% of the work,
yep,
than to put $150 into tithes. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather you put 50 in and then maybe come and help do some things instead of overworking. Let's say it's just us gentlemen on the call. We did 15, 12, 20 people out of a 300-person congregation that do everything. I mean, that doesn't make sense. And it seems like maybe if you were to just say, hey, you know what? Instead of, hey, who's got $100 money, $100 whatever to match this, we don't need to do that. How about I'm going to be here, match being here with me? I mean, to help that commitment piece, because it just seems like I said, the one thing that continues to get the most reaction on this call is the over commitments in church. And I guess it just seems like it's just
in the pulpit, man. He needs to tell some people some things.
I understand, and it's great that people have a strong heart and you're passionate and you want to give. But at the same time, if you are being consistently asked at some point, you know what? It's almost counterproductive, because you got to take a leave of absence, or you got to step down, or you got to say, I can't do this time around, when they might need you. If you were to just say, you know what? I'm going to go at maybe halftime, because I know the other half of the time, this other person is going to be there.
All right.
And I don't need you. The money's great, but your presence is even more important. And I guess that's what I'm trying. And that's what we're talking about with this call and the gadgets, buying the technology with the little kids. It's not the gadgets. The money's great. You know,
that's
but
right.
It's you being there. You know what I'm saying? It's you out there kicking the ball with your son before he go to the soccer game. It's you out there working with him on his free throws. It's not you buying the machine that, you know, you shoot the ball and then it shoots it back at you so you can get the shot. That's nothing. I mean, anybody can get that. But what you can't get is that time that's there. And I think that's the question I'm asking, is the model of the church kind of set up to expose these discrepancies in a lot of different ways? And I'm not going to say, and I'm talking about the present day model, because that 20 for 80, I don't know if that's working.
Oh, it's not.
And that's a big, and that seems like that's a big piece, because all you gentlemen, I will say, I have no role in the church. I go and I go home. That's my role. So all you gentlemen are saying that you have roles and you're doing things. I don't do that.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to figure out is, how do you get that balance? Because that's actually my question. How important is it to hold a role in the church for later? That's not now. But when I'm hearing that, oh, you know, yeah, you show up, and then all of a sudden somebody keeps asking you to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. Well, wait a minute. You know, I still got to have my own personal balance, and my major overcommitment is here. Well, I mean, wow.
Let me ask you a
question.
And this is the monkey wrench of the night right here. Is our God a jealous God?
Huh?
Is our God a jealous God? Is the reason why people are doing things in the church because we're working for the church, or are we working to follow our way to God? Because we, if everybody looks in the Bible, it says that God is a jealous person. He wants you to work for Him. He wants you to be committed to Him, not to anybody else. And because we walk that faith, we feel in our head that if we do things for the church, that we're doing our part for God.
So then it goes back to the guilt part.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Because then I guess I'm not as guilty. I guess I don't know.
Because
because it does. It sounds like then it goes back to the guilt part. Then,
yeah, because I don't think working in the church and God being a jealous God goes in hand at all. I think it's two different things. That's just me. I think it's two separate issues. I think when you work in the church, you're working for the community of the church. And you're actually, I mean, yes, you're doing the Lord's work, but I think God being a jealous God is referred to something else.
Okay, can you explain?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just say when you, and we're all guilty of this. We all are. At some point, we've done this, all of us. Let's just say that you're going out for a job interview, right?
Mm-hmm.
And before you get there, you get on that knee and pray. And then when you get to the job, they talk about, okay, yeah, well, you know, you're hired. And then you say, man, my resume was the bomb. My job experience is superb. But you just forgot that you sat there and asked God. You know, you prayed for this job.
Right.
And but then, in turn, you took the credit. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like a mild example of God being a jealous God. If he gets all the praises, I don't want to take any praises due to him.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? I don't think that has much to do with being overcommitted in church, because just like Brian said, that could also cause conflict in your house. And then where does that put you at with God?
But then that's the whole key. It's because I think you and I had this conversation before, a week ago. Goes back to your wife. Your wife married something else. She didn't marry the man that was in the church when she first
mm-hmm.
She married the man that was going to take care of her. So now jealousy pops in when you, as the man and had a household, has taken the initiative to now do things and work for God. That you put your faith in front of your relationship.
Okay, so now we have a jealous wife because we're doing the Lord's work.
Right.
Somewhat. Oh, okay, I got you now.
Of course. And that's a good point, because the Word of God plainly says, you know, as the married one, the man desires unto his wife. It's not unto God, you see. He's a jealous God when your desires are turned to your wife. And a lot of times when you go through things in your marriage and you put your wife on this pedestal, but yet put God on the, on the back seat, you know what I mean? You know, and what happens is he said he's a jealous God. So, I mean, you know, he said he wants to be first.
Mm-hmm.
So he becomes jealous when we put things before him.
Right. And that's where I brought in the church.
Yeah.
Majority of you, in layman terms, use that as, I'm going to get more involved into the church.
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily, because the Word of God plainly says, it tells you to go therefore and make disciples. It didn't say go to church and make disciples, because, you know, normally the people in church are people that are followers, and the ones that come and want to follow. So he told you to go out and make disciples.
Right.
That's the work.
That's the work.
Yeah. We do it in the indoors, but yet there are many people outside the doors of the church. You know, everybody, you know, the Bible says many, Andrew used the terminology about the laborers, many are chosen, but the laborers are few, right? But, you know, the chosen are the ones who have been called, have been called to a place of leadership and ministry. You understand what I'm saying? See, these are the called out ones, the ones who God has called to this place of leadership, of ministry. And, you know, but few are chosen. See, the chosen, you have a chosen few. But you have a lot of people that are called to do the work. So everybody can't be a preacher.
Yeah.
Everybody is not going to be a teacher. Everybody, you know, is going to be used in the capacity that God sees fit to use them. And no matter, even if it's on your job as a janitor, you know, but all he wants you to do is tell his story.
Yep.
It's not about being on a pulpit.
Yeah, I know for me, I'm not overcommitted at that church, you know. And I think what we're talking about is that you have to, it's easy to be and you have to guard against it. But,
absolutely.
You know, I'm like Andrew said, you know, my yeses are my yeses and my noes are my noes. And I think you just have to be careful because a lot of people work in the church and think that, you know, the more work they do, you know, the easier it is or that guarantees them a spot in heaven. You know, so that's why a lot of people are like, yeah, I do that, I do this, I do that, you know.
Everybody talk about heaven ain't going there.
Exactly. So, you know, I think the whole thing is that, you know, you just have to, you know, God doesn't want you to be, you know, out of your home, you know, 7 days a week, you know, doing this or that or whatever the case may be. But, you know, you just have to be careful, you know, in whatever it is, whether it's, you know, playing basketball or coaching basketball, as Patrice said, or, you know, working at a church or your job. You know, it's just a lot of avenues where it's easy to get caught up and to say yes, 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 you know, where you just got to learn to say no. I think that's the whole point.
Well, let me ask this question. With the concept of overcommitments and what we're talking about here, what are the personal gains that you expect? Because when you think about you overcommitting to something, you're not just saying yes, 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 just for the sake of saying yes, and you're not a pushover. I don't think anybody's a pushover on the call. You're not getting backed in the corners that you can't get out of. So what is your personal expectation from being overcommitted? I don't think we really touched on that.
But that's what I'm talking about, Peyton. That's exactly what I'm talking about. The fact that we don't want to be with our wives. The fact that we want to sign up for all these other things just for whatever personal gain we may have and say, okay, well, I may not want to be home. I may not want to go home.
So it could be wives, financial gains personally, maybe. You know, if it's a job situation and you keep working hard, you may get an opportunity to climb the ladder a little bit faster, get a little bit more favor, some more things coming your way, perks, benefits, whatever. You know, because ultimately when it comes down to it, when you're overcommitting to something, you are expecting something in return somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just, oh, I'm doing it out of it might start out as I'm doing it out of goodness of my heart. But then when it comes to you're on 6, 7, 5, you every night, what are you expecting to gain? I mean, there's something inherently there that we're not really touching on or thinking about. You know, you see it on the back end when your kids are like, where is daddy? Your wife is saying stuff to you and wondering why you're not here. But what is it? And more importantly, do we articulate that to all these key people in our lives, family, wife, children? Do we let them know, look, daddy is overcommitting at the job right now because actually we're expecting another child and we need a bigger home, so daddy's got to do more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or daddy is overcommitting right now because that car that I take you to daycare in every day is about to be on its last leg, and we need to get a little extra money in here so we can – do we articulate that? What is the personal reason? Because overcommit, when you think about it, you're not just doing it to do it. Who does that? Nobody.
Right. Peyton, you write on my paper because that is the next topic because I broke it down into categories. Your job. Do we overcommit on your jobs for raises, promotions, better pay, more responsibilities, and how does that affect our family, our job?
Let me ask this question. How do you know when you're overcommitting?
I'm going to honestly say this is it. I don't think anybody ever really knows personally until somebody somehow it gets thrown in your face and something happens, you know, or your wife says something to you. Your friends say something to you, your family says something to you, and ultimately sometimes it's not even the first time they say it to you. The first time they say it to you, oh, you got a response. You got something.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm just trying to get in there, work real hard, and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just that time of year, you know. Well, we know we got a couple things coming up, and they needed my look. You got a response. So it's ultimately something that happens down the line that comes, and it's probably after multiple times.
Yes,
sometimes it's even, and it, sometimes it's even bad, like falling asleep at the wheel.
Mm.
You know, because you're overcommitted. You know, it's something bad. Like forgetting to pick your child up from practice, and they sitting out there for the longest time, and then somebody call you and be like, yeah, well, oh, you realize, oh, we got him. He was with us. And then your kid upset and been out of shape because, wow, you know, this is the third time dad done left me in practice. And then you got to deal with it, too, or on the back end with your wife when you get home. So it comes at you, but it's not until it really punches you in your face. Like hard, like when some teeth are missing. Because we probably all can take a punch in the face. But not until some teeth are missing and you say, oh, well, goodness, that's my tooth. You know?
Oh, yeah. That is right. That is right. Anybody else want to elaborate on jobs?
I got to agree with him. I have one small thing to say, man. I mean, I always go to the Bible. But, you know, we get overcommitted and we get all bent out of sorts when we want to accomplish a goal that we want to accomplish, right, and to do the things that we want to do. But yet what we do is we have a tendency of saying I, and what we do is we put ourselves over what God has already had planned for you anyway. Because he talks about the key of David. He says that, you know, whatever door he opens, no man can close. You know, and whatever door he closes, no one can open. So we have to already know that the things that, you know, you're going to walk into was already predestined for you anyway. And I think sometimes we take it out of perspective and do the things that we want to do without seeking God first.
Good word.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm. Well, you know we left out one.
What's that?
We left out one. We haven't talked about it all night. Commitments for yourself. We talked about having time with the kids. We talked about the spouse. But I know there's some folks on this phone that want to play golf on Saturday, go fishing on Saturday. Tennis, basketball.
And we going. Don't get it twisted. We going. That's non-negotiable right there, brother.
That's non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable.
So it doesn't
you better give your
priority list.
You better give your wife some shopping money and be like, okay, I'll see you when I get back in 5 hours.
So it's the first time that we talked about today that we still are going to move something to the side because we have to put ourselves, we got to still have time for ourselves.
You set yourself up for a nervous breakdown, man, when you are running and ripping and running and ripping and running for everybody else or whatever your, you know, commitments are, and you're not putting any time or any me time. Got to have me time.
Mm.
Got to have me time, man. You know what I mean? Because then you're going to start resenting your commitments. Even if you need those commitments, you're going to be like, man, I got to go to this horrible job again. I got to come home and take care of these nagging kids, my nagging wife. You know what I mean? Because you don't have any me time. You got to set some time aside for you're not with your kids, you're not with your wife. You know what I mean? You just do your own thing. I don't care if it's like Rodney says, he'll stay up late at night and have his me time. So the next day he got his batteries recharged, he can go do those commitments. You know what I mean? Like me, I'll go play my golf, and my wife won't bug me because she knows when I'm done with that, I'm all hers. Let's go do whatever you want to do. You know, we all need that me time. It's very important.
Yeah, and I would take it a step further and say that me time has to be things that aren't responsibilities around the home. Because it's
one thing to
get outside and, you know, rake or cut the grass or shovel snow. But that's a responsibility of the home. And yet, at some point, that is me time. But you need stuff that has nothing to do with that.
That's right. That's right.
Glad you separated that out.
Yeah. Yeah, because too many times I've had, well, you had time out there. I saw you out there raking. Yeah, okay. No, that wasn't time.
Man.
That was doing stuff for us, you know, because we don't have the house on the block with the leaves all in the yard. Yeah, because
right.
You're not raking anything, so don't try to say that was my time. Yeah,
right.
No.
Right.
No.
Man, because I got to get some fishing in every once in a while. But I find myself not even taking time out for me to get fishing in, that I end up taking the whole family fishing.
That's what's up.
Yeah. But like I'm saying, man, get with some fellas that get up in the wee hours of the morning and they charter a boat and go fishing. You know what I mean? And then maybe on another day, then you'll take your family fishing. But you got to have time where they're just not allowed. Y'all not allowed. I need some time away from y'all. So when I come back, I'll be able to, you know, have my head clear, and I'll be able to function properly.
Function properly.
Wow. Just some good stuff, fellas. Just some good stuff. All right. So let's go back to the next one. Your spouse. Date. Date night. Quality time. That quality time. That here it is. It's Thanksgiving. It's right around. Not Thanksgiving, but Valentine's is right around the corner. And I said I had two Valentine's dates. Because usually the day before, I take some Valentine's evenings with just the daughter, just my daughter, and take her out. Because she's getting at the age now, I need her to understand what a man needs to do if he wants to be involved with her. You know, teaching her the right way a man is supposed to treat her, how she needs to be seeing me treat her own mother. And so I have date night on 13th with my daughter. Then it's just me and her. There's no son, there's no mommy, it's just me and her. We go out and we hit a movie or something, we do our thing. Just like it was an actual date with me and her mother. Does anybody else do that?
Oh yeah.
Not yet. My kids be sleep on the date. So young. My girls.
That stuff ends when they get 16, brother. They don't want to be nowhere with you out in public when they get 16.
Well, I don't know. Hey, it's going to be about 21 before she has her first date. So.
Understood.
If it was up to me.
Yeah, but date night with the wife is also very important.
I got a question.
And that's kind of, go ahead.
Yeah, question. I hear everybody talking about the date night thing, and maybe I haven't valued it yet or really understand the importance of it yet. But how are you able to – I need to figure out how to pose this. How are you able to really get the true essence of date night from something that has to be penciled in or scheduled on the calendar? Now, I understand that we had to do that to some degree when we were literally dating and out there being who we were in former lives or whatever. But now being married and having to pencil something in, it just seems like there's something inherently wrong with the fact that I have to look on a calendar and schedule that in.
But that's the whole reason for this call tonight, my brother, is that that's where we are in life now.
Yep.
And guess what? In most households, if you don't pencil it in, it just don't
happen.
It
ain't going to get done.
Right. But that's the question.
See, you came up with the whole scenario.
Well, I guess the question is like, y'all are excited for this date night. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because I guess what I'm saying is, because to me, it doesn't seem, I guess it's something, it just doesn't feel genuine. You know, because I've had my wife will say that to me every now and then. Yeah, we have a date night. And when she says that to me, it's like, I'm hearing it, and we do stuff together that's just like off the cuff when the child is asleep or when the child is awake and we're doing stuff and we're doing things. But it just seems, like for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like completely genuine because, oh, well, let's plan it out for next month on the 13th. They're like, what? I mean, are you serious?
Let me tell you, brother, the whole thing with that is that women, especially a wife, they enjoy you planning that thing out. Because that means you're taking it serious and you're making it a priority. Not just doing it, oh, you know, the baby's asleep, let's watch a movie and pop some popcorn or whatever the case may be. If you plan that thing out, you know, I got a babysitter, you know, for the evening, we're going out to the movies, we're going to go out and dinner and dancing or whatever the case may be, they're like, oh, man, this guy, you know, I'm still number one around here, you know. So I think just planning it out, you got to realize that women take that as that they feel important. And, you know, they don't feel important when you do stuff with them that's off the cuff, you know, especially all the time. You know, it's important, but the more important thing takes the steps and the arrangements. And, I mean, that just gives you, you know, mad brownie points that you actually schedule the thing out versus you're just waiting for that moment where the baby's asleep. I ain't got to go to work tomorrow. Let's hang out a little bit. I mean, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. And it's very, very important because, you know, there's a lot of folks that see me on a daily basis. And they see me with two phones on my hip. And my wife, if she could hide that phone or get rid of that phone, she would throw that thing in the woods as far as she could. Because it drives her crazy. It drove her crazy tonight. It was like dinner time. She fixed dinner. And my wife doesn't cook that much. So when she does, she's excited.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get away from these kids, man. You know, I love them to death, but, I mean, really, if I get out without them, it's like a relief.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody got to go to the bathroom, and I don't want to eat this, and, you know, there's nobody whining, ain't fighting. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you and your wife. I mean, that is just I'm looking for that March 13th date. I'm like, yeah, we going out, we having no kids, and we going to have fun. You know, we're going to just take our time and everything is planned. So, you know, I look forward to it. You know, as a man, I look forward to the date night.
Yeah. It's cool, man. That thing is cool. I just right now, there's a trip we've been holding on for 3 years. And I finally said, all right, go ahead and put the stamp on it and let's set it up and go. Because I was always doing something. I was always in my career, always trying to make sure that we were okay, the lights were on, and I was, you know, I'm doing what the head of household says. I'm following the book. But in that book, I skipped the chapter where it says, keep, you know, your relationship with your wife alive. Keep the communication. Keep the date night going. You're still going to have to, you just can't tap on the shoulder at night and say, hey, let's go to work. That's not going to work for her all the time. Your wife still needs to feel like she is being loved. And sometimes that's getting away from the kids. That's just being like she can remember the old times with her husband. And that's him taking her out for dinner or to a spa or to wherever they need to go. So she can go back and tell all her friends that her husband is the greatest.
You know what, I'm about to say something that's kind of profound. And some may agree, some may not. But if we really and truly loved being with our wives, we wouldn't have problems with overcommitment.
Yep. Absolutely.
We wouldn't have problems with overcommitment. There wouldn't be a church, a job, a family member, an organization, or anything that would come in between that.
Mhm. That's why I ain't overcommitted.
That's why I'm not overcommitted. I'm not doing it. You know, I lost one wife by being overcommitted, and that's the one thing that I learned to not bring into this relationship because I was chasing money and women and everything else. But, you know, if I was overcommitted to a lot of things and it wasn't my wife,
that's a profound statement right there, Tony.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So I had to figure out, okay, Dodo, you're married. You know what I mean? You can't just be trying to be Mr. Everything and put your wife on the back burner, you know, because then she's going to be seeking what she wants from you from somebody else. And after that happens, then what do we have? What have we lost? So I had to get smart and say, this time I'm going to put her first and everything else second.
Everything else second.
It works.
That's good. So here we go. Do we spend as men more time trying to hang with the Joneses and not being content to what God has has given us already. That
I don't.
To get more.
But the Jews
problem,
got a lot of debt. That's all that is. Jones has got a lot of debt, so I'm not trying to see that.
What Tom was just saying, we're money chasing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't we do that? Don't we try to...
The wives are guilty of that too, though, man. We can't take that rap all by ourselves. The wives also try to get us out there, kill ourselves to get a Mercedes Benz or Benz.
You know, I mean, and or is it that sometimes we over commit ourselves based on society that we want our kids to go to the best school, but what's wrong with the school that they were in now? You know, we want them to go to Harvard, but what's wrong with Howard? You know, I want them to have the things I didn't have. What was wrong with the things you had? Does that affect our mindset? And that's why we overcommit sometimes.
It could play a part. It definitely could. You got a lot of outside factors and things that have always been presented to you. I know when I think about some of the things that potentially get that become conversations in our household, it's because my wife and her sister and her cousin seem to be in some type of competition to see who is doing what and doing when and all this. I don't know. I'm an only child, so I don't play that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll shut that down real quick and be like, I don't care what they're doing. I'm going to tell you what we're doing. And that's pretty much it. But it definitely does sometimes factor in, you know. And then, you know, the girlfriends and, oh, well, Tiffany said they were doing this. And have you ever thought of, I'll listen. You know, I'll give all the nonverbal cues and verbal, oh, what? They did what? Oh, man, wow. All of that. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to do it. But it does. I mean, sometimes it will have you thinking about overcommitting for different opportunities. I mean, sometimes, like, you know, just thinking about, like right now, I'm already thinking about getting my daughter into swimming lessons. So, you know, I'm starting to think about how I can move some stuff around so that when I get into, my wife is off during the summer. I'm not. It just never stops. So, you know, just trying to figure out how I can be in some of these lessons and trying to figure out what I can move around. So at this point, you know, I'm loading some stuff up on this front end, moving some things around that we're going to potentially be during that time of the year. So now, so that I can have that opportunity. So, I mean, it all depends on what it's for. But, I mean, in this case, it would be so that all of us can be there at the swim lessons. You know, and that's a positive, I think, an overcommitment in order to, I guess, in a sense, just not really keep up with the Joneses, but just keep up with my family. And I think that's, when we think about the whole concept of overcommitment and really what it is and what the benefits are, it goes back to what a lot of individuals have said on the call right now. The overcommitment should be to your family and to Christ, if nothing else, but in a positive way, not so that it's always trying to position yourself to have greater than the next or to be better than the next, you know, or to just be the 20% that's giving 80 at the church, but really just being able to do more than enough, but know when enough is enough.
All right. Know right. When enough is enough. Anybody want to elaborate on that? We're good.
I mean, I can try.
Okay.
And I think Rodney asked this question earlier. I mean, how do you know when? How do you know when enough is enough? Is it when, you know, well, I'll tell you a story. I was talking to a coworker of mine today. He's talking about how he had met his wife, and he had this best friend. And he told his wife, well, this is my best friend. It's going to be my best friend regardless. He's off limits. Don't, you know, he's just going to be my best friend. And I, you know, I'm just letting you know beforehand. So he'd go to work, he'd get off work, he'd hang out with his best friend. But while he was doing that, he would go home finally, and his daughter would run from him. And the reason why she would run from him, because she didn't know who he was. because he was making cameo appearances at home. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I guess that was his, at one point he said that he had to tell his friend, look, you know, I can't hang out with you no more because my kids don't know who I am. I need to be at home with them. So I guess that was his aha moment where he realized enough was enough. And I think hopefully it doesn't take something as drastic as that for us to realize that enough is enough, that we can at some point learn to get those subliminal messages from our wives, and then we'll say, okay, well, let me just make an adjustment.
Mm. There was this punch in the face that knocked a tooth out.
Mm-hmm. Did knock a tooth straight out.
Right.
Going to the dentist.
Get that bridge work done.
That's right. Man, this is a great conversation, but I want to move on because we're getting close to that 11 o'clock hour. We're doing good on this call, man. I appreciate y'all coming in tonight and having this real strong conversation. It's real serious about overcommitting because a lot of men have done it. Let's talk about our kids. You know, we got all this stuff going on. We got jobs. We got church. We got a date night with the spouse. But we also got to throw in there, you know, with two working incomes coming in, that's husband and wife going to work each night, you know, you're getting home later than 5:30 due to traffic now because everybody's driving. You got kids' homework to do. Kids have piano lessons. They have ballet lessons. They have basketball. They have soccer. They have all these, you know, choir at school, school projects, you know, weekend activities. How do we fit all that in our daily life, in our daily walk?
They would just have to learn how to manage that time, man, and ration it out, and don't leave anybody, you know, behind.
You know, kids get
hard
hurt
as it may
at
sound.
That basketball game, you know. Hey, can you get off work to make this basketball game? Or, hey, can you get off work to make this choir? And has there been times where you had to say, I don't know if I can make it? And how do you feel about that? I mean, is that because you're overcommitted, or is it just how does that?
Maybe you're just tired, man. Sometimes you just get tired. You know, sometimes you get tired. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, my wife and I, we've been getting to church late on Sundays. You know, when I say late, I mean, you know, 15 minutes late. You know what I mean? But to the point where we get up so early in the morning throughout the week,
mm-hmm.
we want to sleep in a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I understand it's important, and I don't feel guilty walking in there late because I know that Sunday morning sometimes is our time just to sleep in late and then go on with our day. So instead of jumping up on Sunday with a hustle and bustle, we'll just sleep in a little later and then go. You know, sometimes you're just tired. You have to really appreciate certain things in life. And to me, my time with my wife is important to me. So when I'm out working, I can't do those things. So then I have to say, okay, well, I'm going to put something, I'm just going to schedule it a little bit later so I can, you know, do these things. And sometimes, like I said, you just have to schedule it so you can do all the things, but it's got to be within a, you know, a timely way.
Oh, yeah. Anybody else want to chime in on that one? Cool. Well, do we find ourselves overcommitting by and then blaming others for our overcommitment?
You know, I would say with that one, I don't really think you can blame others for overcommitting. I mean, you might try to, but in your heart of hearts, you know that these overcommitments a lot of times are things that you scheduled or what you've done or your lack of being able to schedule. I mean, I think about when my grandmother was alive, what she used to say is her thing was, if you multitasking, you're doing something wrong.
because you shouldn't have to do that. You should be focusing on one thing, one person at a time. You know, my grandmother, of course, this is my mother's mom, has 16 kids. And she was like, I focus on each one of them and gave them their time. And that's what she said. And she said, if you are multitasking, you're doing something wrong. So I think ultimately with the overcommitment, it's like it's hard to blame other people. It's you. It's something that you have done or have not done. Therefore, you've got to continue to load your plate up or want to think that you need to do this or feel like you got to work to get this accomplishment or add this notch or get this perk or that benefit or get that gadget for the child or whatever it may be. I don't really think you can blame somebody else, you know, because it's you. And sometimes it's positive things. Like you all said on the call earlier, you know, when people see that you bring something to the table and you get things done, well, yeah, they're going to ask you. Because you're a go-getter. In the work industry, you're a go-getter. You're a self-starter. You're motivated. You meet challenges head-on. All those little buzzwords that we read on cover letters.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. That's a positive thing. But at what expense? And ultimately, it's you. I mean, it is you.
Well, I wouldn't say that in its totality, right? Because It all depends on what your house is like. Also, somebody said it earlier in this call that a lot of times, you know, you could be in different situations in your marriage where you want to drive around that block for an hour, you know, and you want to and you stay out and you do bowling or you stay out and you do extra hours because you don't want to come home to the drama. So in essence, a lot of times in that relationship, you will come off to that person and say, you know, if things were better and you were willing to hear rather than us always having conflict, then it wouldn't be this way. So, yeah, we do blame significant others and other people sometimes for what it is that we do.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, it was many a time and on many occasions where, you know, I felt the same way, man. I mean, I occupied my time doing a lot of things, man, because I didn't want to hear the drama, you know. I didn't want to come back to the nonsense, okay. So what I did was I occupied my time doing things because the idle mind was the devil's workshop. So in essence, in my mind, I was like occupying my time doing bowling, occupying my time working overtime, occupying my time saying that I'm doing things to keep my house going. But in essence, I didn't want to come home to the drama that I was dealing with every day. So, and then eventually when the conversation finally decided to come up and the person started seeing, you know, my wife started seeing things from a different perspective, then she started commenting on, oh, well, you never hear, you never this, and how can we do this, how can we do that? And then my answer to her was, if you were willing to listen a long time ago, then maybe it would not have been this way. So, yeah, we do have a tendency of sometimes to blame others for what it is that we do, even though, you know, our ulterior motive may have been different all the time anyway because we wanted to do it anyway. But that just gave us a reason.
Yeah,
reason just to do something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But have we done that? I mean, I know I've done it where I've done some things out of spite because where, you know, my wife and I were at our relationship.
Absolutely.
That, you know, we weren't getting along. We were ready to go our separate ways at one time.
There you go.
So, and so you would do things, mm-hmm. but then you find out it's affecting the kids.
Absolutely.
And, hey, you know, then it's time to say, hey, I got to sit down and really reevaluate.
There you go.
And brainstorm and find a different solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking these questions because I'm going to end this call in a few minutes with the 10 ways to balance out your time that I kind of put together. And I found some of these online and then some I had already figured out for myself, and I wanted to discuss them and see if you thought that they were right. But, yeah, I think children is the main big part of this. A job is a huge part of overcommitting. In churches now, you know, you're honorable, that they look at you, they see that you're one of these guys that they can depend on, you know, charity, they want you to come on the weekends and do all, you know, do this good stuff, and because there's so many few. You know,
I think a lot of
add more stuff to you just because you will say yes. We have a lot of folks at our church that way. I talked to one guy tonight where he found himself with some issues with his wife due to the fact that he was always committed to the church. He was always at the church. And he ended up pushing back for a while. And he ended up getting back, pulled back in. But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, he just ended up getting pulled back in. So,
but do you think that we ultimately get committed to the church, or do you think the majority of the people that commit themselves to the church and what they're doing feel as if they're committing themselves to the call that they have on their lives?
Ooh,
no. No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people know that they've been called to do something. And some people know that they were called to preach. Somebody else knows that they were called to the ministry, to be a minister. Somebody else knows. You know, like I said, few are chosen. Or many are called, but few are chosen, right? So I'm just saying, you know, do you know the call on that person's life? Do you know your calling on your life? Do you understand what it is that you're supposed to be doing? Or are you just acting because the need is, you know, there? Is there
a
calling?
That's a question, though, because you don't know. How do you know? You know, there was a person on this call, I mean, that said that he was driving by, and his wife and I said, hey, there's a church. Let's go to that church.
Hey, and God adds to the church as he sees it. So
right.
Obviously he was called to that place. You understand what I'm saying?
It's called to
and
that.
All I'm absolutely. And all I'm saying is this: it says, before I formed you in your mother's womb, we all know this, right? He said, I knew you. So basically, what he's saying is, before I put you in your mother, you were in me, and I told you who you were even before then. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've come through the matrix and you passed through the womb of a woman, okay, and you forgot about me, because you were born into sin, into iniquity, right? So now what you have to do is you have to reconcile yourself back to me. And when you reconcile yourself back to him, then what you have to understand is that you have to know or come to the understanding of what he called you in the beginning. And then there's another scripture that says we need to press towards the mark of the prize of the high calling. So what was the high calling? What I called you in the beginning. So we all have a purpose and a destiny, so we need to find that purpose. So we ultimately have to look at it from the perspective of, have I been chosen? Have I been called? Is this why? Is this the reason why I'm doing these things? What is your calling? Find out what your purpose is. The only way you're going to find it is by pressing.
Right. And you know what? I have to agree with you there for myself. I can't
mm-hmm.
talk about anybody else. I can only talk about me. It's
mm-hmm.
because I don't know how I got to Waldorf.
There you go.
Maryland. It was never a place I ever looked at saying, I'm moving to Waldorf.
There you go.
I know how I got to the church I go to. It was through my daughter, and I've said this on the phone call, that my daughter and my son have kept my wife and I married, and then it's gotten our marriage to the point it is today. It's gotten me to know a Rodney and a Tony based on our walk. And it has gotten us closer, as we're almost brothers now. You know what I mean?
I know why you're here. You're here because it was designed for you to be here. It was designed for you and whoever else put this thing together, for men to come
right.
together and do the things that we're doing now. So God had already predestined that from the beginning. And now what you're doing is you're moving into your purpose, what he's called you to. Because as you go, these things will reveal themselves to you, and you
because
know what you know.
We're committed
to
this call. Tony and Rodney and I are committed to this call. We have to a Tuesday.
Absolutely.
You know, we know that this is not our call. We have told everybody this is not our call. We were called to this call.
There you go.
So because we were called to this call, because I've met Tony in the church one day saying hello, and next thing you know, we're on a call together. And now we work together. He teaches classes on Wednesday night. We coach basketball together.
Rodney,
and now you and now you're on the radio and in other arenas helping men, you know, helping other men and helping them with relationships.
Right.
So you say you don't know why you were called to Waldorf or ever thought about moving to Waldorf, but your purpose and your destiny would have never come forth if you would not have met Rodney or whoever you met, okay, you know, to get this thing started. See, it had to happen.
It had to happen because I told my wife, the job I work at like a company, I said that I used to work for them. It was my first job out of college. And because I was the youngest and I went through a situation where they accused me of doing something that I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The day I walked into the man's office and they were going to literally fire me, I walked in with a 2-week notice because a job came by that out of the blue I just threw in. It's like, I'm just going to throw my resume out there. Right? Never looked at the job, never, like, pursued the job. But the day the guy was going to come in and say, well, we think you stole from us, so we're going to fire you and we're going to, I came in there with a 2-week notice of saying, I'm leaving your company anyway. And no, I didn't do this. So they couldn't fire me because I came in with a 2-week notice with a new job.
And another thing you got to understand is that the people's lives that you're touching with this call are people that God had called you to anyway. And if you would have not fulfilled that purpose, how would you have stood before him?
And it's just weird because I was just telling Tone the other day, I'm at the job I said I would never go back to. And I'm managing folks in this job. And because of the work I've done so far, and I've been there less than a year, I already got a spot bonus, which when I sent my thank you note, I sent it to my bosses, and today one of my bosses, the higher bosses,
mm-hmm.
one of the two that I said thank you to didn't even realize I got a bonus and was mad because he didn't get one. And he was like, geez, you got to be careful when you say, I said, all I did was just say thank you. But it was one of those, it's just, and the thing is, like, my wife is working part-time now. She had a full-time, but it didn't work out. So we went from having 2 incomes to 1.5 incomes. And then to get just to walk into, here it is, a bonus plus your check I got, like, on Friday. Man, it was a great thing. I didn't ask for it.
No.
It was just there. I didn't even know I was getting it.
That's because you're doing what you're doing, man. And as long as you're walking according to the purpose, man, how can you not be rewarded for the lives that you're touching on this call, man?
Man,
and I told you that, Patrice. I told you that months ago, year ago.
He did.
A year ago, I told you what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I said, don't worry about money. I told him. I said, don't worry about money. Don't worry about your finances. Don't worry about nothing. I said, come on, take this ride with me. Put your seatbelt on. We got a job to do. Don't worry about nothing else.
And the one thing I left out again today is, and Tony and Rodney can vouch for this, I get a letter in the mail in December saying you have been approved to be a deacon of the church. I never asked. Nobody ever came to me.
There you go.
It was just, we see what you do. We won't make you a deacon of the church. I haven't even become a member of the church at that time.
But the calling is on your life. And see, that's the difference. See, that's how you know the call. You see, when these things come the way that they come and the things are happening the way that they happen, it automatically tells you what your calling is, you know. And it's up to you to continue to follow that and to see what the end is going to be, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not looking for it, you know. You're not looking for a title. You're not looking for a name. You know, you're not looking for accolades. You know, you're just doing the work of the kingdom because it's something in you telling you this is what you need to do.
But my whole goal was to find out how I can balance my life into what I do. because my wife is a laid-back person. She likes to hang out. She likes to have fun. But she's not the one that's going to get into all the volunteer work and everything. She'll be right by my side, holding me down. But she's not that one that would get out there and do it. If you ask her, maybe do some greeting or something, you know, hold the door open, or she may do one of that. But as in take on a role anywhere, church, a committee at work, school, she's not the one to really do that unless somebody really needs that. So she'll say, oh, yeah, my husband would do it. And some of this is because she'll pass it on to me. Some of my commitments I have, she'd be like, oh, yeah, my husband do it. He loves doing stuff like that.
Well, just know that the attacks are going to continue to come because you and Ronnie, Patrice, and you and Ronnie are doing what it is that you're supposed to be doing. And as long as you continue to do what you're supposed to be doing, knowing that know that the attack is going to become stronger. And you know, a lot of things, like you said, with job situations and things of that nature to try to cause you to doubt. But you just got to keep pressing, knowing that this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, I thank you for the confidence, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I'm going to be honest. I mean, since it's the first time I've been invited to the call, man, it was like I gravitated to it. And I'm like, wow. You know, and I don't like when I miss it because I just know that it's the work of God. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And as long as this continues to happen, then, you know, you open this thing up as a thing for the leaders of the household. But yet, in essence, the majority of the things that we talk about are God-related, God-oriented, God-surrounded. And for the people that's calling that don't even know God, they're hearing things about God. So actually, you leading people to Christ, man, not even really knowing it.
Before I go through this balance, I have to add in.
Hold on.
And I get ready to talk. And I can speak to that. Because believe me, when I first got on the call way back when, you know, a lot of you heard me say this. I tried to come with this call with everything that I had to kind of, I guess, as people say in the workplace, the little term is, you know, I want to be the, not the voice of reason, but what is the little jingle people used to always say? I want to be the devil's advocate.
That was me.
I wanted his advocate. I was riding on his back on the call, you know, and that. I can honestly say that that's what the call has done. The call has allowed me to say, you know what, I do not need to ride this. I need to walk on my own 2 feet, and I need to be able to recognize the importance of the blessings that are being afforded to me by being on this call from others and the wisdom that they can bestow upon me, because I don't have all the answers. And the answers that I do have, based off of facts, sometimes have to be bigger than that. It has to be faith and it has to be feelings. You got to put them facts to the side sometimes. And things that, you know, have been kind of, you know, instilled in you through life and lessons and heartache and pain, and really just get on the call and just hear others. And that's it. I mean, so I'm co-signing everything, you know, because I feel that definitely you three gentlemen have done that with this call and really being able to shed light on a lot of different topics and areas. And you've been patient with those of us that aren't that well versed in the word, and I'd be the first one to say that's me. I'm not, you know. And every now and then I throw some out. I think it was a question though, like a couple calls back. Somebody was talking about a prayer closet. I didn't know what that was. I had no idea what that was, you know. And I'm sure someone's probably mentioned it to me or said it. Or I've probably heard it in the church. But you know, sometimes I'm paying attention. Sometimes I'm not. You know, I'm just going to be honest. So, you know, this call does do exactly that. And having people that are committed towards pressing the topic. And actually, you know what? I'm waiting for us to get the open mic because I wouldn't have said this a long time ago, but what I'm not even going to say. I'm going to wait until we get the open mic, then I'm going to bring it out. But, yeah.
I got to put in my 10 ways to balance out.
Oh, yeah. I want to hit it 10 ways.
Or it's a little bit more. I think I got about 13. I added a couple at the end. Y'all ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, here you go. Ways to balance out your time. Number one, get a good night's sleep. I think Tone brought that up earlier tonight in the call. Get a good night's sleep. You know, you need that. You know, God made, He worked for 6 days and rest on the seventh. Even he was tired. You know, we got to make sure that we get a good night's sleep. And even if that's 4 hours, you know, of just comfort,
yeah.
We just got to make sure we get a good night's sleep. Number two, take control. Don't blame others for your overload. I think we'll talk about that this evening. You know, be your own man. Make sure that you know, you do things for yourself, and not only for yourself, but what's going to make sure that you put things in priorities that won't affect your family life. Say no. You know, at work, I said the model for this year for my government clients is to learn how to say, just say no. Because they have said yes so much at work where they have gone through all this stuff, and it's crazy. Now they're trying to fix it. Gratefully consider every request and just say no to the ones that you know you can't do. Set boundaries to protect your family time. Seek solutions in order to shift through your daily problems and brainstorm solutions. Axe the guilt. No one can do it all. Refuse to compare your weaknesses with someone else's strength. Decide what things matter most in light of eternity. Realize that kids will someday be grown and enjoy life, enjoy them now. So, because they're going to get old, just like Tone said, after 16, they ain't going to want to be bothered with you no more. Spend quality time with your spouse. Encourage each other. Don't get caught up in the extracurricular activities trap. There are many successful adults who never played t-ball or took piano lessons or done soccer. Realize the value children learn from downtime and home life will set a foundation for their future households. I'm going to read that one again. Realize the value children learn from downtime and home life will set the foundation for their future households. And last, seek God. Our limitations remind us how much we need him. That's it, guys.
That's a good list right there.
Right. It was good.
I'm glad y'all enjoyed this call. I know it's kind of slow tonight, but this is a very important call. And on very important calls, it gets real serious because at the end, you're helping somebody out. And tonight, I took a lot out of this call, and I appreciate that. But that's it. If anybody doesn't have anything else to say, it's open mic time. Hey, got it.
Well, I got the open mic question, and I think it kind of relates to some of the stuff that we're sharing here tonight. You know, when I think about church and I think about a lot of the examples that have been shared tonight and in other aspects over the course of the time that we've been on these calls, you know, how important is it to hold a role in the church? Aside from just being a member. I mean, of course, being a member is great, and that is by all means, I guess, a starting point, especially when you are consistently attending. But how important is it to hold a role, whether it's working with Sunday school, whether it's, I don't know, getting involved with, I don't know, being, I don't know, a role. I mean, is it important? Is it imperative? Is it something that we should do? Because, again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't feel guilted in anything, because, like I said, I go to church, and then I go home. But should I be looking to establish another position or not even a position, just looking for another role in the church? And is it important to do so?
I would say, I'm going to be honest, I would say no. I would say that you would have to know what it is that you're called to do in the church. See, you could be there, and maybe your job is to be that giver that helps support the ministry and continue to support the ministry financially, because that's your gift. Because, you know, that is one of a gift. You understand what I'm saying? So, I mean, if you're called to do something else, just don't jump into things just because just jumping into things, you can wind up doing that all the time. I mean, I did it for a long time. I mean, I jumped into every ministry. I was in a marriage ministry. That's where I met Andrew at. I was in all kinds of other ministries. I was in, you know, ministry after ministry after ministry, but it didn't profit anything from it. You know what I mean? all it did was take my time, and I didn't, and it didn't profit me anything until I moved into what I was called to do, and finally realized what it was. So know what it is that you're called to do. But I mean, but also, there's nothing wrong with trying to do something and in the church, because that's how you find out what it is that you're called to do. You know.
But you have to start off by at least showing up, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to show
up. And once
up.
I mean, that's like, you can't win the lotto if you never play.
There
you know
go.
What I'm saying? And church, you have to show up. I showed up, didn't have a clue. I didn't. All I knew was Bible study, and then on Wednesday, and then church on Sunday. That's what I knew. And then people came to me and said, "Well, you know, you don't have any sons, so why don't you go ahead and volunteer to help these little boys out, and you'll get your reward because of, you know what I mean? You get to be around little boys because I had all girls, you know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, whatever." And, at first I said no. But then the guy that was doing it, me and him became real good friends, and he was leaving to go to the military, and he really needed some help. So I was like, okay, you know. And it's kind of been one of the best moves that I made, because now I am, they know me, they know they can depend on me. The old me, the little strip joint I used to go to, they knew me too.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? They knew me well. I knew the owner. I knew all the dancers. I knew everybody. I mean, that's where I was all the time. And I was a member, right? But I was a member for the wrong team. At least now I know I'm on the right team.
Right.
And regardless what it is, they have me doing on the bench, on the sideline, or whatever it is, I'm going to get in the game. And I think you have to get in the game to find out what that calling is.
And that was exactly my point. I got involved in so many things until I found my purpose. But, yeah, it was good to be involved. But I had to get involved to find my purpose. I mean, other than that, I would have never known.
Right.
Never known.
So over half of it at least is showing up.
Yeah.
You got to show up. Just
being present.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You got to be present and get the blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And see, the blessings may not be monetary. It may not be a glorified, hey, calling you up and giving you a plaque for the work that you do. The blessings may be internal, meaning the work that you're doing is self-gratifying to yourself, where you feel good about it. You know what I mean? When I started teaching those kids, I never taught. Like Patrice said, he had teachers in his family. I didn't. I don't know no teachers. Only the ones I went to, you know, that I had to go be taught by in school. So when I got the opportunity to teach, and I didn't have a lesson plan, and then I said, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to this Bible because it's Bible-based, and we're going to start at the beginning. You know what I'm saying? And I said, how many people know how we got here? And these little boys would say, well, my parents brought us here, and you know, tonight. And I said, no, how many people know how the world came about? And then I went to the book of Genesis, which was the beginning. And as I was teaching them, I was learning.
Right. There you go.
And Peyton, you touched on that before. You said, as you were teaching your daughter, you were learning.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So now I was the beneficiary. I was the one. Even though the kids may have benefited, but I benefited just as they were. And then I would tell the kids, I said, go out tomorrow and tell one of your friends in school that you know Jesus. Plant a seed. And then the little kid said to me, you have planted seeds in all of us. Now, for me, the person I used to be, I never would have thought in a million years anybody would utter those words to me. That was more gratifying than all the money in the world.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
My story.
That's awesome. I'm not going to talk too much, but I'm going to give you a little part of my story, man. You know, and at one time I would be ashamed to talk about it, you know, but I must honestly say this, you know. For a long time, I didn't know God, didn't believe, didn't follow, you know, didn't have a desire to. And but for a long time, I lived in fear. I lived in fear of what people thought and what people would say, and what they said, and how much effect it truly had on me. And probably through the conversations that we have here, and when I speak with you gentlemen, you would never know about. I mean, you would never know what I'm about to say to you. see, I was told when I was younger that I would never amount to anything. I was told that I would never be anything in life, and I lived that thing out to the point that I was in special education all my life, period. Okay, never was the real learned person, wanted to get into the book, and I mean, I did everything contrary to doing the right thing as in studies and things of that nature, and not until I got saved did I find out who I am in Christ, and which gave me the confidence to stretch and learn more about myself and have more confidence in myself, and from that all I did was excel and grow. You see, so it was very traumatic for years, man, because you know I couldn't deal with people, I couldn't conversate with you. I always had to put on the facade. I always had to be hard. I always had to put on an image that, you know, that truly wasn't who I am. I was taking on, you know, somebody else's personality or what I saw in others and try to become that, you know. And God had to show me different. And then from there I went to seminary, and and from there, you know, they were asking me about different things if I learned in school. I didn't know what the world they were talking about, okay? But all I knew was I applied myself, I figured it out, I got in the books, I learned it, and I did it. And I did what I knew I was supposed to do and what I was called to do.
Yeah. And the rest was a wrap.
The rest
and
a
I
wrap.
Guarantee you, and I guarantee you, that there's been some people that have been through this call that have heard some of the things that you've said.
Oh, yeah.
And you've touched them. For
oh,
sure. Because
yeah.
I'm a firm believer. Yeah, I'm a firm believer, man. There's no sense in, there's no such word as coincidence. It doesn't. Everything
no.
is calculated, man. Everything, every move that we make, this conversation right now, we just
yeah.
back it into it. It's calculated. It was supposed to happen.
Absolutely, and I had to go through those trials and tribulations in my life in order to come to this place of Him allowing me to understand who I am, allowing me to understand that the abilities that I had, and I wasn't lacking in anything, but only because of, you know, my foolishness and what I chose to continue to do in life and not try to excel, because I had to take on something that I was not, and then I was allowed to see differently. And when I was allowed to see differently, then I said, hey, this has to change. But I had to take the initiative to say, hey, this has to change, because I could have remained the same ignorant person that I was with the same jacked up disposition that I had, you know. And I could have continued on that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I chose different, you know. And in everything in life I've ever done, I excelled. You know, and I've always been a supervisor or manager of my job, and people would have never known my plight or what I've been through, you see, unless I told them. But I tell people because I want them to know that all things are possible through Christ.
Yep, for sure, for sure.
Without.
And Peyton, let me tell you, man, I had an uncle that died some years back, and I didn't have to go to his funeral. I don't know if I told the story before. I didn't really have to go to the funeral, because I could have just said, you know, I got to work or whatever the case may be, because it was a six-hour drive, and I had to be there at 11 a.m. You know, I had to probably leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, I said to my wife, come on, let's just go to this funeral. So, you know, and me and him really weren't that tight. I mean, you know, he was just an uncle, you know. But anyway, make a long story short, we show up at the funeral, we get there on time, and we're sitting in the, you know, and the sermon was great. The sermon was great. I wasn't saved at all at this point. And then the pastor mentioned the word, just one word, rapture. And I've always listened to Nita Baker sing about the rapture, whatever it is, just her version of it. You know what I mean? So that's my only connection to that word. You
right.
see what I'm saying?
Right.
Right. But anyway, like I'm saying, so then I look at my wife. I'm like, what is this
rapture. Is he talking about Anita Baker up in this church? You know what I mean? I'm tripping, right? And then my wife's like, I have no idea. I have no idea. So anyway, we stay there for the whole, you know, for till the next day we drive back home. And we're kind of embarrassed because we felt as though we were the only ones that didn't know what this word meant. And I'm harping on this one word because it affected the both of us. So then we said, we really have to go find a church to go find out these words, this lingo that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because we felt as though a lot of other people knew, but we didn't know. Mm-hmm. And that was the Lord just tugging on us at this point. He's like, okay, first of all, I told you to go to the funeral, even though I know you didn't want to go. So we showed up. Then I threw some language out there that I knew you didn't understand, but you were gonna yearn to find out what this language was. You know what I mean? So one day on a Friday, we're driving down the street, and I see a church, and this is Friday night, like 7 o'clock in the summer. And I look over, and I say, you see that? She said, yeah. So we slid in. We went to the church, you know, and we said, you know what, this is the right place. And we just knew it. And then we joined, and then it's been a wrap after that. But it was just the one word, the one embarrassing word that we didn't know that got us on this path. So sometimes when you say to yourself, I don't understand why these brothers are saying this, we all have a story that leads us to the same place, but it's just a different story that tells a story that was already been told, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So the smallest trivial thing when you think about may be that thing that's telling you, get in the game.
That's right.
I appreciate that, fellas.
And I didn't mean to single you out, but I know that you had asked the question.
I appreciate you directing that response back, all of you, and sharing that with me. Because I think it's important to hear that, and that's one of the things, like I said, I'll co-sign this call, you know, and all the calls is because, you know, you're hearing real-life examples. You know, this isn't something where somebody's giving you a story or telling you something second, third hand or whatever. It's, no, I'm sitting on the phone, and I'm hearing it from you, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I've gotten to the point because of knowing you gentlemen and knowing the voices that, you know, I'm looking for the voices, I'm looking for the examples because it's gonna provide relevance and really shed some light on things, you know, and it's just positive. So I appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
No fear in God, man, you know.
Mm-mm.
That's why I always say to you guys, reason I talk about the things that I talk about, that I can say you're a slave to the things that have you mastered, man. And nothing mastered me. Nothing controls me. You know, nothing has the power over me because I won't allow it to be that way, you know, except for God. And that's it.
Yeah.
Not a change or nothing.
I'm going to tell you what's so funny. I haven't told my wife this, but.
You want to turn the recording off?
No. Nah. No,
you
know
you'd be
recording. At our church, our pastor is going through faith. So he's doing a series on faith. And I
faith?
Yeah.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not an expert in the Bible. I don't know. I can tell you what's in there, but I can't quote it word for word or how some folks can do where they're just more proficient and have read the Bible multiple times where they know things and what chapter it is. But I find myself like, God, give me something to tell these kids today. And he just, all of a sudden, you know, out of the blue, I get the radio. There's somebody saying something on the radio about faith. And now pastor's been throwing faith out there. And he said, Patrice, go to, in my head, he was like, go to Hebrews, go to 11 in the first verse. And,
mm-hmm.
And it's the definition of faith.
Faith, yeah, absolutely.
Mm, wow.
Yeah.
And so I said, wow. I told the kids that tonight. I read that definition of faith and what faith, what it means in their life and where they're going. And then, so I was on the train and I kept reading. And then verse 6 says, here's your definition of fear. If you don't have faith, then here's what happens if you don't use faith.
And I'm like, man, this correlation right here is something I didn't ask for. I just said, you know, I'm trying to, what am I going to tell these kids tonight? Because in my I take out 5 minutes out of my practice to sit down with the kids and discuss either a line or a scripture from the Bible or just discuss life with them. And I try to give all glory to God and give them some type of meaning with a biblical saying behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just popped out today, and I was just amazed how here's a guy who, and Tone can tell you, I'll call Tone on Wednesday night, and I'll say, Tone, you have anything? I don't have anything. He says, hey, we just run it by everyone when we get there. And by the time I get there, I have 3 different verses that go with the topic. And then I say, Tone, you have one? And he'll pop in one. And it'll be on what we need to talk about, and that's responsibilities, providing these guys, why do they need to be responsible, young men?
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing how it happened to me. And I think what we said, is this our calling? I don't know where I'm supposed to be in this calling, but I'm somewhere close.
No, that's right.
Hey, man, hey, let's just take it a little deeper. Let's just take it a little deeper. And, Brian, I'm going to direct this at you. And the only reason why I'm going to direct this at you, because I believe that you've been where I've been.
Okay.
By the way you talk, I believe that you've been where I've been.
All right.
Okay, back in the day, growing up in New York, you got into a lot of things. Me.
No, that's
okay?
right.
And I'm talking about
all the nonsense, you name it.
A lot of stuff. And I'm talking about trying to understand why, for me, I was so slippery growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the drug trafficking, heavy, and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And all of that. Watching a lot of my friends getting jammed up, hemmed up, going to jail.
Yeah.
And wondering why I was spared. Many times. I'm like, so many times I could have got, you know, they kick in the door and the drugs are in the house, but they don't find them. And I'm sitting there like, how did you not find them in the kitchen under the cabinet? How did you not find them? To the point where you start thinking back. The dude pulls the gun out of you and the gun jams. And you're like, why am I not dead? You think about all these things that happened in your life. And then you meet Jesus. And then you realize He was with you the whole time, saying, I always had something for you. I always had something for you. I just wanted you to pay attention.
And think about it, though, right? Think about it. You know, you can use a Job experience for that analogy, you know.
Wow.
So even though he allowed, even though God had to allow Satan to come after Job, but all the time he had a hedge of protection around him, you see.
Yep.
See, you came out when you were supposed to come out. You were called to for a purpose. As you're here now trying to fulfill the purpose that you've been called for. You see, what you have to understand is everybody says, Satan is trying to kill me. I said that one time, and Satan is trying to kill me. Why is he trying to kill me? No, he's not trying to kill me. He's trying to kill our prophecy.
Yep.
He's trying to kill the word that God has put in our mouth for such a time as this. So what he was trying to do was he was trying to destroy the prophecy that was spoken over your life. And that the prophecy that was spoken will come to pass because you have angels around you, man. You know, read Hebrews 1 and 2. You know, be careful, you know, who do you entertain, because you may have entertained angels unaware. You know, why they didn't find those drugs? Because the angels will blind their eyes and it will not allow them to see. You know, you're meant and set for a purpose. And when you've been called to something, it's going to happen. He does things without repentance, man.
Yeah.
And when he does it without repentance, when he's called you to do something, that's what it's going to be.
Can I tell you our experience again, a shocking experience that happened to us on Saturday?
Go ahead.
We have a, you know, I'm at work, and there's one of my workers that worked for me were saying that her and her husband was trying to do something. They were trying to, you know, help out marriages. And I just needlessly said, hey, guess what? We're looking for somebody to moderate our women's club, right? Mm-hmm. And so
like you said, we're getting low numbers. We know that it will work. We just got to find the right person. So she agreed. I said, listen to our call and see if this is something that you agree to. And she did. And she did it her first time tonight. And they had 12 people all night long.
Record number. Record number. First
wow.
time out.
But before wow. that, Tone said, listen, we need to give her a trial run. We got to make sure she's serious, that she can do it. Right? We're just not going to hand
Uh-oh.
The keys over to, you know, a non-driver, doesn't have a license. So we got a call on Saturday night on TalkShoe. We knew that, you know, people could get on because it's a public domain. And
mm-hmm.
we were on a call, and a lady gets on, and her husband gets on. And they jump in, and they say, we're atheists. We don't understand what you're talking about. We don't believe in God. I believe in my husband, because my husband is, you know, I think our conversation was about being truthful.
You know what you should have said to them when they said they were atheists? The fact of being atheist is this, right? I mean, not to destroy what it is that they're saying. So what you should have said to them is that in order for you to say you don't believe in God, you first had to recognize that he existed. So how can you say that, you know, you don't believe in God, but you believe in your husband? In essence, in order for you to say that you don't believe, you have to know that he is.
I believe Tone said that. I think Tom.
Oh! Listen! It was like, just you got five lions, right? Just picture
mm-hmm.
five lions in a park.
Okay.
And then a lamb just walks right in the middle.
Oh yeah.
Think about it. And the five lions are sitting there, right? Like I cannot believe it. That a lamb just walked up into our midst. But they don't make a move because they don't want the lamb to get. They already know you toast. But we just going to sit back and we're going to see why you here.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. We sat back, we listened, we kept our conversation going because they was chatting. They wasn't talking, they was chatting. We kept our conversation
right.
going, you know, and we just figuring out who was going to get to it first. That's all it was.
Right.
It was Matt. We knew we was going to address it, but who was going to get to it first? And not only did we handle it in a professional way, but they went back on the website and joined the conference call.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
They could have
awesome.
Been on tonight, as far as we know.
Exactly.
Right. And that's,
you see what I'm saying?
That's awesome, man. You know, I mean, look what God is doing. You know, and you want to know why you want to know why you were spared. You want to know why they didn't find those drugs. You want to know why. You know, we don't, you know, we didn't get AIDS from all the relationships we've been in.
Man, say that, man.
You know, unprotected sex we've had with all these different women. We want to know why. You know, what you called for a purpose, man. You know, God's going to see fit.
Yep.
That you fulfill what it is that he called you to do. You know, but you got to be willing. You know, you got to be willing to come back to reconcile yourself to him. See, all will not be saved. You know what I mean? We're all not going to reconcile ourselves back to God. And everybody's not going to walk this walk, you know. But when you do and you start walking towards him, seeking him, then all he's going to do is open up your destiny and your purpose in him. And all you can do is fulfill it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like using lion analogy. I mean, I'm not trying to get real religious and spooky with y'all, but the lion analogy. I mean, what's the characteristic of a lion? Lion is what? Territorial, right? They, you know, lions have a tendency of marking their territory with urination, right? And that's, and then when different tribes try to come into the area, they know not to come into that area because it's been marked and they can smell it. You
right.
know, that's what Satan tried to do to us. You see, he tried to piss on us. He tried to mark us. You see, and you know, saying, hey, this is mine. So as long as you continue to do what you do, and you know, and what it is that he's calling you to do, he doesn't have to worry about you because you're marked.
Yep. You got to do things, get that scent off you.
There you go.
Yeah, you got to get that. You got to get that water.
Water. You got to be washed with the water. There you go. That's
get
exactly
that,
where I'm going.
Get
at.
That scent off you.
You got to get washed with the water. in order to get your sin off.
That's right.
The point. The lions are vicious and mean. That's what he said. He's going throughout the earth as a roaring lion, seeking to see who he can devour, who he can mock, see who he can drop his sin on.
I have to say, as long as these calls have been going on, my, this is me, ever since I've been on this call, my favorite call has always been the pornography call, because I was the one having that problem. That was my topic.
Right.
And ever since then.
Me too, by the way.
I haven't looked at another pornography tape. Now, have I still watched a little HBO every one now and then? Yes. But that scene of having to have that tape going downstairs where everybody's asleep and putting the tape in, or just taking time off of work just to look at tapes and waiting for the weekend, that was my me time, you know, where people were going out, going fishing and golfing, and I was staying at home looking at tapes. That one call, I never did it after that call.
Hey.
I haven't done it to this day.
It took the taste out of your mouth. That's what it did for me. It took the taste out of my mouth. But see, again, we can go back to that jealous guy. We can go back and start talking to that jealous guy. You realized where you went to seek the help. Then you realized that there was only one that could actually really give you the help. And once you were delivered, you went back and said, thank you, Lord, for what you have done, for you have shown me the victory over this bondage.
Right.
And as long as you keep saying that and keep giving him his props, he's going to keep it strong. You see what I'm saying? It's when we start taking the credit and start saying, nah, it was me, I was just strong, I had to overcome that thing, dog. No, man, that's not what happened. Tell the story the way it is.
Yeah,
you got on that knee. You went in that prayer closet, took it in there with you.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? I took my pornography in the prayer closet and said, I'm trying not to bring this in here tomorrow. Help me not bring this back in here to talk about this thing tomorrow with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now it's a thing of the past for me.
Thing of the past.
And I was bonded that thing for 30 years. Watching Midnight Blue in New York growing up as a kid. You know what I'm saying? It was 12 o'clock, came on for free. You could watch it. And I was turned out then. Now I'm a pornography guy. Let me just, you know, to nothing. You know?
Yeah.
I feel you on that. I mean, I used to get down and watch a little bit of it, man. But I'm going to be totally honest with you. I think the turnoff for me with pornography was, man, is that I was such a freak. I just wanted some booty, right? It really didn't matter. It really didn't matter to me. But see, I couldn't sit down and watch no movie, man, and watch somebody else get down without me being involved. So, I would kind of peek at it when it came on off here, watch it for a minute, man. But if I wasn't involved, man, I couldn't do it.
Look. We with you on that. But you gotta take it to the next level. It'd be times when it's not time to have sex. And you still want to see it. You want it around you some kind of way.
Yeah. But see, I was more interested in the woman, man. I was just trying to get mine, you know. I was like, this ain't doing it for me. It made me want to go this time. That's what it made me do.
Mine was both, man. Mine was both.
I know.
Wow.
Straight up.
I get women over
and pop the tape in. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I got issues.
You know what I'm saying?
My hand right now. I got issues. And I need
uh-huh.
I got some issues. I found out that my son has my blood.
Uh-huh.
And Tone knows what I'm talking about. I told Tone the other day, I said, listen, my son is a player, and he don't care. And he ain't but seven. But last week at the game, at church, as always, at practice, and I think it might have been practice of the game. My wife is in the stands, and my son rolls right up to this other seven-year-old girl and says, can I give you my number so you can come over my house?
He's seven years old.
Wow.
Get his back off.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He says, so we can hang out in the green room. And my wife said, what's the green room? He was like, my room.
What?
He was serious. Yeah.
Wow.
We ain't going to let that go down, though, man.
Listen,
we're going to teach you right.
But the funny thing, we in the Gap. Tony and I in the Gap. So like I told y'all, we did wipe out that shopping. Right when I said it to Tone, a little girl comes by. Hey, Quentin.
Wow.
Tone, look at. I said, see, I can't take this dude nowhere.
Wow.
And we out of town, man. We not even. We in
not
Virginia.
Not even in Wardog. We in Alexandria. We in a different state.
That's hilarious. Oh. I guess that's the meaning of the seed reproduces itself after its own kind, huh?
Yeah, I'm in trouble. If he anything like I was, I'm in trouble.
No, you can't say that. You can't say that. You know why? Because he's going to have a better opportunity than you.
Right.
He's going to have a better opportunity than us, man, because you already got him. You already got him on the right path, man.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You got his foundation being built up right now.
Yeah.
Trying to break that generational thing, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to
break
that.
Yeah, we got to break that.
Gap, man.
Yeah.
Because that gap is long in my family. That
you know that's right.
That thing is long. And the funny thing was, like, the wife tonight, see, I had to talk to him a few minutes ago before we got on the call. My wife says, you need to talk to Quentin. I said, why? You know? And she was like, I think, because somebody's mama, it was a girl there tonight. I don't know if it was the same girl or a different girl. But they was over there playing, and then all of a sudden Sharon had to look because she was like, the mama went over there. What y'all doing over there? And he was like,
wow.
I said, oh, Lord, I got to watch this dude.
Because
he's cutting up, man. I'm like, oh. I mean, it's funny. But it's a serious situation, so I already know what I got to do. It's time for me to sit down and talk to him. But
no, that's right.
But it's just the whole point of, wow. You know, like the wife told me the other day, all right, I'm already upset because my daughter is turning into a teenager and her body is changing. Okay, I'm not ready for that. But, now my wife is like, yeah, you know your son got hair down there too. I'm like, he only 7. How he got hair down there? I go, hey, and it's long too. I was like, oh Lord, that's all I need now is 2 players at the same time. Well, fellas, it's 11:30. It's almost 12 o'clock. I got to hit this work tomorrow, man. I hate to have to shut this down because y'all are some great guys and I love enjoy talking to y'all. But is it all right if we call it tonight a little early?
Hey, well, yeah.
Peyton.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. But, yeah.
Did you get your question answered, man?
Yeah, I got my question answered. I appreciate it.
My man.
I appreciate those stories being shared and all the lessons, of course, that I've taken away from it. But it comes from personal experiences and personal stories, and that's what I value the most. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's just really hearing, you know, that all of us are going through it. I mean, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
We're all going through it.
Yeah.
Trying to get that scent off.
You know
that's
right.
Yeah.
By the washing of the water, right?
Yeah.
Wash it in the water.
Yeah.
The water dance. And they call it the water dance. Get in the water.
Yeah. That's a throwback. Good enough.
You go way back on it, huh?
Yeah.
Way back on it.
Going back on some old flex.
Yeah, it was like 20 minutes long. The version.
About that. Yeah.
Hey, guys.
I used to DJ, so I know that
I
one.
I have one request, though.
Yeah, yeah.
If we can't take this call, because this is a beautiful call, and I like what we talked about at the off-mic hours and how we enjoy this call. And what I would like to do is, if we can't use this call, is it all right if we use this call as testimony and put this on our webpage?
Sure.
Yeah.
Man, ain't no shame in nothing, bro.
Yeah.
Out, and we'll put these testimonies on our webpage so other people can understand what this call brings to them. And if can we maybe set up a day where we call y'all back or, you know, after a Tuesday call and we can set up a testimony?
recording.
All good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good, brother, man. We'll
anything
put it
that
together.
Can help somebody else, man, is what it's all about, bro. You know what I mean?
Well,
because somebody else is struggling and is afraid to talk about the things that we talk about. Touch on the things that we touch on, man, and they don't know how to share it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that somebody else is dealing, man, is powerful to them, you know.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, good. All right, well.
God bless all y'all.
All right, fellas. Y'all have a good
y'all
week, man.
Tuesday.
Hey, have a good week, fellas.
It's Tone's
okay
week next week, so he's going to put it down for us.
All right.
I figured. Okay, now.
All right.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.
All right.